Hey, what's going on, guys? It's your boy, JP. Just wanted to remind you that what you're about to listen to is the Big Brother Canada Top 10 Player Rankings podcast hosted by Mike Bloom. He did a really good job with the live feed correspondence, so I think you're really going to enjoy this one. Just a disclaimer, my rankings were not incorporated in this podcast, so it's only Mike, Brent, Alex, and Taryn. Their ranks are what matter for this one, not mine. If you do want to see my rankings, there's probably about three of you out there. You can find them by going to robiswebsite.com/patron and signing up to be a patron of Rob as a Podcast and joining the Rob Has a Podcast patron Facebook group. In there, I'll be posting my personal top 10. You can check that out. Also, don't forget to subscribe to the Rahappy Hour. Go to robiswebsite.com/Rahappy Hour. That way, you'll never miss an episode of the Rahappy Hour, including my episode last week with Godfrey Manguiza from Big Brother Canada 3, one of my personal favorite podcasts that I've ever done next to the OC podcast I did with Eric Stein. But Godfrey was just so great. I mean, a really very entertaining guy, but very intellectual, cerebral. He's a great thinker. That's why they call him a philosopher. He really has a lot of great insight into the game. And by hearing him talk about it, I think you're going to really appreciate how he played a lot more, even if you did so already. So check that one out. robiswebsite.com/rahappyhour. We also talk about getting launched and full releases, so it's a very fun time. All right, enough banter for me, guys. Enjoy this one. It's a lot of fun. Ryan Elder, take it away.
It's the Reality TV Rahappy Hour with Jordan Parhar, because he can't spell Parhar without R-H-A-P.
Greetings, true believers, and welcome to the Reality TV Rahappy Hour. Do not adjust your podcast player of choice. This is not Jordan Parhar. This is Mike Bloom. I know it's been announced a couple times in the past couple podcasts, but Jordan is away at a prior engagement, someone else's engagement, actually. He is emceeing a wedding, and we wish him the best of luck there. But while the cats are away, the mice will play, and I've brought several mice with me. You've heard them very recently, so recently as the last live Reality TV Rahappy Hour they did, forming their own little Frankenstein-esque Big Brother player. It is the Big Brother live feed correspondents, Taryn Armstrong, Alex Kidwell, Brent Wolgamott. Happy Super Bowl Sunday, guys. How are you guys doing today?
Doing great.
Doing great.
Awesome. Awesome. Glad to hear. Well, as much as you may want to talk about American football on this podcast, Alex especially, I'm sure, we are not here to talk about anything American. Instead, we are going to talk all about Canada. That's right. In this edition of the Reality TV Rahappy Hour, we are ranking the best Big Brother Canada players. And this actually comes at a great time because as of this week, I believe the Big Brother Canada 4 season premiere was announced. Finn, I think it's sticking to the same schedule. Guys, do we have any other intel into Big Brother Canada 4? Any sort of hints at twists or production things or anything like that?
You know, other than the commercial, you know, that I know you can audition for if you're in the Toronto area, I think they've been pretty tight-lipped about stuff.
Oh, yeah. Why would you need to audition for a Big Brother commercial?
You know, they're looking for enthusiastic people in the, you know, Toronto
you're,
area.
You're not on the show. You're not going to be on the show, so just stand in the crowd. Yeah,
it's super deja vu right now.
Alternate opportunity to be on TV, man. You know, that's a thing, right? That's awesome.
Exactly. No,
there is the news that Sarah Hanlon has replaced Gary for the sideshow.
Yeah, and I'm sure Jordan can actually provide more of a story behind. I know there was, I think you guys actually talked about it when you were covering Big Brother Canada last year. There was like some drama on social media about Netta was supposed to be on the sideshow and then she got kicked off. And I know there was talking about Gary just being generally more unprofessional and not as into the game as somebody like Peter. But it's going to be Sarah Hanlon and Peter Brown on the sideshow, which it makes me extremely excited just because I feel like the claws are going to come out every single week.
The glasses collide. Yeah, it'd be great.
That's true. It's battle of the four eyes on Big Brother Canada 4. So in a very similar manner to what you guys did before in terms of these ranking podcasts, we have made our own individual lists of what we consider the best Big Brother Canada players. We're going to rank a top 10 on this podcast that we sort of opened it up to make sure there were some similarities between our lists. Obviously, this is a much smaller sample size than even, you know, when you guys were doing the best Big Brother players to never win a few weeks ago, you were looking at 16 seasons worth of people. Whereas here, I believe, Alex, you said there's something like 46 players that have played over the course of the three seasons. Brent, do you feel that things were harder considering you had a much smaller sample size than what you had before?
Yes, Mike. I actually do think it was just as hard as the last time we ranked the American Big Brother players, mainly because I feel like the casts have gotten better. And I know I've said this before, but I feel like Big Brother 3 cast was one of the best casts that I've ever seen in my life. I know some people can quibble about the twists and how it might have ruined the show or ruined the cast. But, you know, the people who were there, the people that they got onto the show, I felt like was some of their best work that they've ever done.
So obviously Big Brother Canada is even more so than Big Brother US known for its amount of twists. And specifically this past season, we saw an inordinate amount of twists going on, and they've ranged from the fun to maybe the not so fun. Taryn, I know you're a person that really likes to look at these players in a vacuum, specifically with your rankings. Was this a lot harder to do in a show that has thrown so many curveballs at these players, and some have arguably gone out due to these curveballs?
Yeah, it's much harder because there's not only is there a smaller sample size, but the twists add this element of chance way more so than without the twists into the game. And even if you want to say that some people are more, you know, likely to have a twist benefit them, there's still so much chance involved in how it might benefit them and when it might come, so that there's too much that is out of their control. So it's hard to rate how a player might do without the twists when these twists are interfering with the game in so many different ways.
Now, guys, I would be remiss not to wish you a pseudo-happy podcast-versary here. I mean, I remember when I was covering Big Brother Canada 3's cast preview with Rob, the flags were sent out to call for live feed correspondence, and I remember you guys coming on to try out for Big Brother Canada 3, so it's been about a year. Alex, what a difference a year makes. How do you feel? Has it felt like an entire year since you made your RHAP debut?
You know, I don't know. It's been a whirlwind, I guess. You know, it's been fun. I'm just enjoying the experience. You know, here I am getting the podcast with Mike Bloom, who I was listening to before. And I was always thinking, you know, hey, me and Mike Bloom should podcast together. We're practically the same guy. And here we are. So, you know, that's pretty incredible. And yeah, it's fun stuff. I'm enjoying it.
We are very similar. We were talking beforehand about how we both have extremely inappropriate posters in our background for a Canadian podcast. Alex has Team America, and I have Doctor Who, but we're all Canadian on the inside for today. And this is a perfect time to bring up that we are currently live on blab.im. So if you guys have any questions going along here, make sure you type /Q into the chat room. We'll try to answer it to the best of our ability. But obviously, we have a lot to talk about here. And before we get to our top 10, just like you talked about with the Big Brother Canada, best Big Brothers to never win rankings, we should do some honorable mentions here. Because again, even though there are 46 players to play Big Brother, there was a lot of disparity in our list, to say the least. And that's definitely going to be a topic of contention coming up. But just like you guys did with the previous podcast, we each picked one Big Brother player who did not make our cumulative top 10 that we wanted to bring up. So I'm just going to go clockwise from my blab window. Taryn, let me start with you. Who did you choose for your honorable mention for the Big Brother Canada players that were not in our top 10?
Okay, so this is not going to be a popular choice. I chose Peter Brown as my honorable mention. He was pretty high on my list. I am personally not a fan of Peter Brown. I like his game, but I don't like his rationale for his jury vote. I don't like his explanation for why he was so bitter. I don't like the behavior he showed in the jury. It really rubs me the wrong way. I'm not a huge fan of his character either. He seems like a perfectly nice guy in real life, but the character I'm just not a super big fan of.
I love it. And this is his testimonial. This is the good part, you guys. Right?
But when you look at his game, he's a much different person inside of the house. He was doing really well. He ran up against the train of Emmett and Jillian, who won 5 competitions back to back in a row. And not to mention the fact that I believe Emmett is one of the best players Canada has ever seen. So you take Emmett out of the equation, you take their winning spree out of the occasion, and I think Peter Brown could go on to win that season. He makes a huge mistake. The big mistake is that he doesn't veto Topaz. Right. But it's not that it's a mistake in how it turned out, But Emmett really was on his side, and Emmett really did campaign for him to stay in the next week, and that wouldn't have happened had Topaz been in the picture. It wasn't as big a mistake as people make it out to be. It really was a toss-up. He ends up making the wrong decision, but I can see why he made the decision he did. There are a lot of good aspects to his game that I think shouldn't go unnoticed, even though I don't agree with him as a jury member in any sense. And that's why Peter Brown is my honorable mention.
Yeah, I mean, I will say I think that both what Peter did, both after being voted off and his subsequent appearances on the sideshow and everything, has sort of, unfortunately, again, trying to take this all into a vacuum, but it's sort of poisoned his image in my mind, just because we were talking about this offline a bit. In him becoming part of the sideshow, I feel like he sort of has become, to the casual Big Brother fan, this sort of unofficial voice of the game. When the truth is, this guy, he makes mistakes in his analysis. He has a very different way of viewing the game, as you can see from the various arguments he got into on the sideshow. Brent, Alex, what do you guys think about Peter in general? I'm looking on your list. Alex, you had Peter in your top 13. Granted, he was at the bottom, but he was in your top 13 to begin with. So are you along the similar lines as Taryn there?
Yeah, no, I agree with everything Taryn said in his defense, and I agree with everything Taryn said in terms of, you know, kind of his criticisms. I don't think he's not as high on my list as Taryn's, but I think it just comes down to me, a bit of, you know, taking into account that this is a game that's different from Big Brother US. I mean, when I was ranking, I really factored in the charisma factor a little more heavily, because I feel like this is a game where Canada is going to kind of, you know, lean towards those who can work the DR and work the camera. So I think that absolutely is a factor in this game. And I don't think Peter necessarily comes off the way he wants to a lot of times when he's talking. He's definitely got, he understands the strategy of the game better than most who have played it. And he's definitely got some social awareness. It was just, he needed someone who was more kind of charismatic and socially capable like Alec to implement a lot of his ideas.
All right, Brent, I'm going to consider this a warm-up act for you. Spit fire at me. Talk to me about what you don't like about Peter Brown's game.
Well, the best, I have to tell you, the best part about Taryn picking Peter to be his honorable mention is that now everybody knows that Peter didn't make our top 10. Yay! So here's the thing. I cannot get over how he behaved in the jury. If you want to be a Big Brother player of any stature whatsoever, you have to be able to set your personal feelings aside. You cannot tell me that Gary is the better player over Jillian. In no universe is that true. And the fact that he couldn't at least own the fact that he was, I don't know, bitter. I mean, let's just call it what it is. They were four bitter people, and they wanted to rig the game in their favor to get the outcome that they wanted. They didn't care about wins. They didn't care about strategy. They didn't care about anything in the house that happened, except for the fact that they wanted one of their own to win the game, and they wanted to make sure that Jillian and Emmett didn't win the game. And I think that, to me, is just a huge black eye. Never mind the fact that he forgot to use the veto on Topaz after they just took out your biggest ally in the game in Alec. And you know you're alone in the house. You need allies. And you decide to go with the people who just took out your ally rather than someone who was with you. I mean, Topaz was with him the entire game, pretty much. I know she was with him by way of Alec, but she was still with him. The fact that he couldn't trust her and decided to go with the people that just backstabbed him, his behavior after the show, you know, trying to act like the voice of Big Brother, that rubs me the wrong way. Like I said, I was glad he didn't make our top 10, and I can't wait to see who Alex picked for his honorable mention. Go ahead,
great,
Alex.
Great segue. Let's see. Alex, who is your honorable mention? I have a feeling, I don't know, is this person that much different from Peter Brown? I guess we're about to see. Go ahead, Alex.
Well, I touched on it just slightly when I was just talking about Peter Brown, but I believe my honorable mention is Peter Brown's better half, Alec Beal. I know some people disagree with this, but Alec demonstrated a lot of skills in the house that if you put him back in there in another situation with any random group of people, I think Alec will do very well. Alec demonstrated a lot of, God, I'm getting a lot of backlash for this.
This is why I miss doing live podcasts sometimes, just to see this chat of everyone melting
this
down.
This is great.
A minute, what, like 10 of our podcasts by bringing up Alec?
This is fantastic. But no, I mean, if you just take aside, yes, he made some stupid decisions. But if we look at this roster of 46 people, there's not a lot of great players. I mean, there's a lot of like Talas and Daniel Alexanders and people like that in this mix. Alec is highly intelligent. He's now got a social psychology degree. He was working on it while he was in the house. He's a charismatic guy. Suzette was not on his side, and he's willing to like, you know, put on this Eduardo persona and rub her feet. And Suzette is like totally on board with Alec. She's like smitten after that. He's like, to me, he set himself up in an amazing position from the very beginning. And then he just pretended to be this idiot who was just like chilling with Topaz the whole rest of the season. And I think if Topaz isn't put on the spot where she's HOH in front of everybody, like where cameras are on her in the HOH room, she's made to basically blow up her game in Alec's game. And she has to basically put up two people who she would have told Alec would have coached her differently. So basically Alec's entire game has exploded in that moment with a really, really bad twist. And I think, you know, that's an example of something that can happen. But I think he's also someone that brings more skills than most people to the game. And that's why he's on my list. Did he get a little cocky a couple times and throw some things like overtly? Yeah. Was he a perfect player? Absolutely not. But he's persuasive. He's charismatic. He's socially capable. And he's got some real skills.
So, Taryn, sort of like Alex with Peter, you also had Alec on your top 13, albeit a little bit low. But talk to me a little bit about that. Do you agree with what Alex is saying about the benefits of Alec's game?
Not particularly. I think that Alec is he's a decent player. And there aren't that many good players. There's only 46. So he inevitably made some sort of list. But I don't agree. I think that he makes a lot of huge mistakes. I think the biggest of which is that he lays down and gives up his game for Peter, basically, by throwing the veto to him and saying, Peter, you're gonna go ahead in this game and not me. And I mean, that's just a huge, huge thing for me. I think you can't be a great player if you're gonna lay down your life in the game for it. And then also, I think he's primarily the reason that they were targeted in the first place, because he was being so overt about his strategizing. So I don't think he's a better player than Peter. I do think your points about his charisma and his knowledge about the game, I think those are going to help him more often than not, but I don't think he deserves to be in the top echelon of players.
Here's my thing, though. We give Chilltown a lot of credit for never turning on each other and for being a twosome that would always be a twosome under any circumstances. The circumstances don't go against them in catastrophic ways because there aren't ridiculous twists being thrown against them. But I don't know if it's really such a horrible thing that Alec shows loyalty to Peter at the end. They've been able to turn it into a podcast. They established a relationship from day one. And it really comes down to a thing of like, Alex said at the moment, I believe that Peter has no shot at winning the votes because he doesn't have the social skill. So at least this way, Peter's off the block and I can work on people I might be able to get, like Gary and Topaz and Tala, people who he had some connection with that Peter had no connection with. To me, that's a big difference.
I think that makes Alec a good friend strategizer. I don't think that makes him a good big brother strategizer. And I do. That's one of the things I knock Chilltown for is your assertion that Will kind of laid down his life for Boogie to win the game. I think that's a bad thing, and I dock him for that if it's true. I think that if you are in the game of Big Brother and we're ranking you on your ability to win the game, willingness to lie down in order to, you know, have a relationship is going to hurt you. So that's how I see it.
Brent, any other comments about Alec?
I'm still recovering from the fact that The Shield and Chilltown were just mentioned in the same sentence. I mean, I don't know how that
to
happened.
To be fair, the sentence was The Shield happened? Is a lesser version of Chilltown.
So my that's- God. Oh, it's like, it's terrible. Like, first of all, Alec, you know, rubbing Suzette's feet, that doesn't make him a strategist. That just makes him a whore. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, I don't think he did anything special there except, you know, gave her a teeny bit of attention that, you know, made her maybe want to work with him. I think she was a terrible player to begin with. So I his ability to get on her good side, I don't know that that's a great testament to his game. I can't get over him laying down in the veto. I just can't. I mean, you're fighting for your life in the game. It's your life in the game. Big Brother is not a team sport. You both cannot win at the end. And for him to just give up and give it to Peter, who he knows he's going to go on the block, if it, or he knows he's going to be the likely evictee, if he remains on the block and doesn't win the veto when he was fully capable of winning the veto. It just boggles my mind. I just can't with him. I really can't. And by the way, I don't think that he's necessarily all that charming in the game. To me, he came off like a used car salesman for the most of the game. He came off as somebody who was an Eduardo type, who you just didn't trust. Who you know he's always thinking behind the smile and the kisses and the flirting. There was not a lot to Alex's game that I liked.
Yeah, well, I guess.
Go ahead, Alex.
I guess we could agree to disagree on that one, and we probably feel the same way. We probably could agree to disagree about that same perspective from Zach Olenek as well. So,
don't spoil it. Might be some talk about that coming up. But I do agree with you to a certain extent, Brent. I do feel like this is a guy who thinks he's a lot smoother than he actually is. I mean, we all have to acknowledge him throwing that HOH during that first double eviction. I mean, that was God. Awful, just the most awful HOH.
It's really bad.
And we're just in the same league as Arlie screaming like he has hemorrhoids during that potato competition in Big Brother 2. Like this, it was a horrible.
That was fun though.
And this is also the guy who, like, you talk about someone who, like, might be able to regain his composure. He's a very smart guy, as you said. Let's remember Talgate as well, when he, like, had a huge emotional breakdown over this one incident. And granted, it might be a very emotionally traumatizing incident, but that is a signal to a lot of players of, like, this guy's a little emotionally volatile. So this is one of the cases where, and I'll say this about Peter as well, I think if you take a look at their first, like, 4 or 5 weeks in the game, good. That's fine. It's totally fine. But then, like, you take a look at sort of after that, after they choose to evict AJ over Andrew in the instant eviction. And I think that's when their game sort of takes an interesting turn into a not so pleasant territory. Brent, let's move on. Let's hear your honorable mention for someone who did not make our top 10.
And I have to say that I was really sort of stunned that this person didn't make our top 10 because I felt like there was a lot more support for her on the panel. Believe it or not, I'm picking Ashley Wood, the third place finisher from Big Brother 3, to be my honorable mention. She's not in my, she's not my number one or anything like that, but I do think she deserves some credit. I always called her the brains behind the operation. It's sort of tongue in cheek, but I do think there's an element of truth to it. First of all, I don't ever see a scenario in which Ashley is going to be voted out early on. I really don't. She's always going to find her way into the Cool Kids Alliance, it seems like. And more times than not, she's going to be the last one standing of her alliance. She's usually going to have a meat shield or two around her, which she did this time. And she's going to have a chance to win it at the end. Look, she wasn't charismatic. She wasn't lighting up the TV. She was pretty boring. I give you all of that. But she was very capable when it came to the strategy. I remember the first week after the triple eviction, she was the new head of household. Even before she won head of household, Peely had asked her, if you had a magic wand right now, who would you eliminate from the game? She said, Sarah, because she's the biggest threat to all of us, and I think she's going to come after the guys. And if she comes after the guys, that hurts us. She's right. That's exactly what ended up happening. Sarah, by way of Brittany, ended up going after the guys. And I think that there's a lot to like about Ashley's game. She's a little vanilla, a little boring, but I really think she has all the tools to win. She's just somebody who's never going to be targeted, and it's always somebody who's going to be there at the end to have a chance to get into those final two spots. And you never know what happens then.
Yeah. So, I mean, what I will say is, like, I do agree that she's definitely a personality type that can very easily make her way to the end. The interesting thing to me, and this will sort of be where our sort of philosophies might disagree here, because I know, Brent, you're a big advocate of how challenge wins can incorporate in a general Big Brother player, which sort of lies contrary to the Steve Moses, I think, pointed out the most of, in his opinion, a great Big Brother player does not need to win competitions. And I think it is very indicative that Ashley had to win those last three vetoes in order to make it to the final three. Had she not, she would have been summarily eliminated. So I do think there might be a little bit of a corollary there to your statement of she would have made it to the end no matter what. I mean, I personally agree with you in terms of, like, I love the fact that she was sniffed out Sarah. And I think she did have some brains in her. I mean, she was, like Zach, she was a part of a lot of these sub-alliances near the beginning of the game. The problem that I have with her game is that I think out of the entire Diaper Alliance, Peely is the only one she can win the game against. I think if she goes to the end with Jordan, with Kevin, with Zach especially, she is not going to win that game. And so I think had she found a better job of really positioning herself socially in a way that she can take multiple routes and find places to eliminate these guys, that's going to make her a better player in my eyes. Alex, Taryn, you guys have anything else to say about that?
Yeah, I'm totally with you. For the last point you made, I think her biggest flaw is her inability to win a jury vote. We've talked to Jordan and we believe that Godfrey would have beaten her in a jury vote. We know that Sarah would have beaten her.
We don't know. That's not a done deal. I mean, he said it's 4-4 and that Willow and Sarah would have made the call. That's what he said.
He believes though that it would have gone to Godfrey. That's how he would predict and be him being there. We don't know for sure, yes, but he would predict that Godfrey would have beaten her. And I think that you're right that Zach would have beaten her, that you know, Jordan, any of those guys, or any of them would have beaten her, really. She needed to be against Peely. I think she set herself up to do really well, though, in that she was probably going to be there with Peely after Jordan leaves. It's a really good setup. And I think the reason that she needed to win those competitions was because time after time, from the triple eviction to the power where her HOH was taken away and she wasn't allowed to compete in the next one, it really screwed her over, basically. She was in a great position prior to that. And I do want to say I do have her on my list as well. Actually, all of the honorable mentions were on my list. And I do think she's really good. I think that a lot of the points you made, Brent, worked to her favor. And one thing that I think was really impressive was that she wasn't targeted in the triple eviction at all. She was probably Sarah and Brittany's biggest threat in the game at that point. And they didn't go after her at all. They completely avoided her and took out two of their allies instead, which is crazy. And I think it speaks well to her game. That said, again, I think she has problem winning in the end, and I don't think she's the type of player who's going to actively get herself there with the right people all the time. So that's why she's not super high, but I do have her on my list.
Alex, any other thoughts?
Yeah, I just don't give her as much credit as I think Brent does, and maybe even as you guys do. I mean, to me, she's like the biggest difference between Ashley and Jordan Lloyd is that Ashley was surrounded by smart people from the beginning and was able to like have conversations with people who understood the game, and Jordan was surrounded by crazy people. I really didn't see her. I mean, obviously, she's got some natural intuition that serves her well. She picked up on some things, but I mean, she was just thrown into a power alliance from the very beginning. It was basically a bomb squad. And then they were like, oh, we need to add two girls to make it not, you know, suspicious, just like the bomb squad did. And Ashley just kind of gets roped in by association to Zach and by Bobby's infatuation with her. And I think a lot of what worked for her this time doesn't necessarily work with a very different group of people. I mean, obviously, they tend to cast young, horny people. But I think if they don't, then Ashley's maybe in trouble.
All right, so I'll move on to my honorable mention here. This is someone that actually made three of our lists, so I thought it was a pretty good consensus pick here. I'm going to Big Brother 2. I'm going with Mumsy, Sarah Miller. So this is interesting because I do feel like I could write like a paper here about the role of the older people in Big Brother. And I put older in quotes because older is basically over 28 at this point in the world of Big Brother. I mean, going in there on paper, Sarah had a lot against her. I think as a mother, as someone who is a lot older than the median age of this cast, there is a high possibility that you might not be able to associate with them. We see it with Donnie. You know, it's almost a flip of a coin as to whether you'll be able to sort of ingratiate yourself in there. Sarah did a great job with it. I mean, the first five probably benefited, but I mean, she was sort of viewed as the house mom. She was getting along with all the younger people. And I mean, in those first few weeks of the game, again, she was fantastic socially. I'd call her the best player out of the first five by far, just because she really had a lot of social options out there. So in week three, she flips, I'll put that in quotations, on that Girls Alliance, and she votes out Paul. Next week, Rochelle, the person, one of the people that she betrayed, wins HOH. Guess whose name is not on the chopping block to get put up? That is Sarah Miller. I think that speaks tantamount to Sarah's social ability and her ability to not really stand out as a target, even when she really puts her neck out there. I think where her games goes a little bad is, unfortunately, once Kenny came out to her, and I think it was week 4 or 5, she firmly found her head ensconced in Kenny's butt. And I think then things got a little tricky because when Heather won HOH, I want to put up Kenny. Kenny wins veto. Okay, I know that him and Sarah are close now. Let's put up his best ally and get rid of her. So Sarah kind of got screwed because she showed her cards and showed how close she was to Kenny. Other than that, I feel like she played, for someone who went out week five, I feel like she played a great game. Terry, I'm gonna start with you. What are your thoughts about Sarah?
I love Sarah. I think it's terrible that she's not on our top 10. And maybe this is a good place to point out. This is the top 10 of all the rankings we've done. I think I disagree with the most. This is the one I'd see just the list and not the podcast. And I'd be like, what? How did they get that? This is crazy. I think Sarah should be on this top 10. I think she's a fantastic player. She was one of the best players in Big Brother Canada 2. I do think her fatal flaw is that she's way too loyal to Kenny. She goes down with the ship. She could have jumped with Arlie, but she doesn't. And that's, again, it's the sort of thing where it's like, you need to be self-interested. You need to be able to have that killer instinct. And the reason that it's not always a make or break for me, in the same way that it wasn't for Alec, even though I do think it's a flaw, is that it's not always going to happen. It's not always going to come up. There's not always going to be a Kenny that she feels so attached to that she's going to throw her game away for. And I think without the double eviction, Kenny goes home. She has a week to reintegrate, and she probably does really well. So I think that Sarah is a great player. I think she's a great social player. She was very good strategically as well, involved in the first five, but also had connections elsewhere. She was really the core of the first. If the first five had made it to the end, she was the winner of that mm-hmm. five.
If the first five had made it to the end. Wow, what universe
let's not,
is
let's
that?
Not pretend it doesn't
the one
happen,
where
the bomb
no
squad. Yeah, the bomb squad makes it to the end. If they win that HOH and it's not Canada's HOH and they just win a couple more competitions, it's game over. They came pretty close. So I think that she's a great player. I had her on my list, and she should be in the top 10.
Brent, you were the only one of us who did not have Mumsy on your list. Do you want to talk a little bit about what you think about her game?
Well, you know, listening to all of us name our honorable mentions, I think it's really telling that to me, the fatal flaw out of at least most of them is that they were loyal and sort of went down with the ship. You know, Alec went down for Peter. Ashley never would have betrayed Zach, and she would have lost to him in the end. And here, Mumsy, you know, went down with the ship with Kenny. I really didn't have a lot of respect for her game, mainly because she was emotional to the point where she was. It seemed to me like she was somewhat unable to function, like she didn't know what to do. And it's fine to be emotional. Sarah Hanlon, famously in Big Brother 3, was very emotional. But she had her breakdowns, and then she stopped and she went back to work. It seemed like Mumsy was just a continual train wreck. Not for nothing, but I'm never going to consider somebody a great Big Brother player if you can't tell that Kenny Brain is gay. I mean, come on. He's out there in, you know, olive oil slathered all over his body in his tidy whities, you know, twerking. And you think he's a straight guy? I mean, girl, come on. Stop it. Like, it was.
To be fair, no, Brent, you just described my typical Thursday night. So I don't know if it's me or anything.
And I believe Arlie was doing it right with him. So
yeah. He was a joiner. He wasn't in the lead. Yeah. Anyway, I wasn't impressed by Mumsy. Nice girl, sweet. But, and then, you know, like I said, you have to be self-interested in this game. I think that's going to continually pop up. It's an attribute that comes up on people on my list. And she just wasn't. She just was willing to take it in the butt for Kenny. Sorry.
Alex, any other thoughts about Sarah?
Yeah, I think I, you know, Sarah just made my top 10 barely. I think she's a great player and a good example of someone who probably wasn't any kind of student of the game coming in, but just had some real natural skills for what you need to be good at Big Brother. I mean, she was a great listener. If you really saw like how she engaged people, how she talked to them, she really, you know, everyone trusted Sarah. I've gone back and watched, you know, it was nice that I was snowed in a couple weeks ago, so I had time to go back and watch so much footage. But like you really see, like even Netta is hoodwinked by Sarah. You know, the girls thing is like really thought of as legit for so long. And Sarah and Sabrina are just there undermining it the entire time. And Netta and Ike and Rochelle are just like, you know, kind of spun in circles for weeks. And that's not really Sabrina's work. That's mostly due to Sarah's ability to feign genuineness and how she's able to really convince people she's on their side. And I think that's the kind of universal trait that will always serve you well in a Big Brother game.
All right, so I feel like, and this is going to be, you know, us being a little selfish here, I feel like we'd be remiss to not talk about the person that is missing from our podcast today. And he unfortunately did not make our top 10 list, but I feel like this is as good of a forum as any for us to dissect the game of Jordan Parhar, who actually made his way onto all of our lists. Alex, talk to me a little bit about your take on Jordan's game.
Yeah, DJ Parhar outspending the hits of the 70s, 80s, 90s, and today. DJing, I don't know how he's doing. His Big Brother game left a lot to be desired. I think he is the kind of guy that really gets the game and, you know, like a lot of people before him, he won't be the last, but really just overthought it. I mean, really overthought it. Just, you know, put himself in the mindset of everyone else and then some, and really just was worried about how he would be interpreted in relation to Zach, and just tried to overcorrect and overestimated Zach's ability to think rationally, and just a lot of estimations of other people's thought processes that were just poor. So, I mean, strategically, he's one of the best, I think. He really gets the game. You know it from a 5-minute conversation with the guy, but socially, he was just off the mark in reading a lot of these people and where their true intentions lay.
Yeah, so just to outline it, since he did make all four of our lists, I figure I should read out where he placed. For Alex and Brent, he placed 12th on both. He placed 11th on mine, and he placed 7th on Terran's. Brent, talk to me a little bit about your thoughts on JP's game overall.
Oh, you know, JP, it really breaks my heart. I love him to death. It's such a missed opportunity. I mean, I feel like he was playing a good game, you know, at least replacement level, going into the fateful week where he got himself evicted. Just, I think, started to play with his heart a little bit. You know, it's one thing to be looking at the game from the outside, you know, making the calls on, you know, what you think the right move is. It's another thing to be in the game playing it. And I think Jordan found that out the hard way. You know, really overestimated the threat that he himself posed to the rest of the house by way of Zach. You know, people didn't evict JP because they were afraid of him. They liked JP. They evicted JP to strike against Zach. And that is really where he paid the price in the game. I liked what I saw from JP from the first, you know, 3 to 4 weeks. His fanboydom sort of died down a little bit as the weeks wore on, which I thought was a good thing. He got it, like I said, got himself to the Newport Alliance, and then was also working with, what was the name of the alliance with Kevin?
Oh, the Fortress.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Yes. How can I forget that? I thought he was in a really good spot, and I really want to see the parallel universe where he doesn't volunteer to go on the block. What happens there? Because I really feel like he had a chance to make a run at the end of the game.
So Taryn, you were obviously very high on Jordan's game, higher on it than the rest of us. Talk to us a little bit about the positives that you see in Jordan's game.
Yeah, well, I mean, we want to talk about alternative universes. How about the one where there's not a twist, where Cindy comes back into the game, having talked to the other pre-jurors and found out about the chop shop, and is told explicitly, only trust Sarah, only tell this information to Sarah, and make sure you get Zach and JP out. Without that happening, even though he volunteers for the block, he doesn't go home. They don't have the votes. So I think that Jordan, he's the kind of player, the more he's in the game, the more he's going to get better and better at it. And I think that that twist kind of took him out before he was able to really take control of the game, even though he was doing a really good job at it. I do think there are a lot of mistakes. First of all, volunteering to go on the block, terrible mistake. He definitely got overconfident. Another huge mistake, I think, is when Johnny is telling him, listen, Sarah told me all this information about you and Zach and how she thinks that you guys are doing stuff, and we're both up on the block right now. Why don't you keep me, because I'm loyal to you guys and Sarah's not? And he was, and Jordan and Zach were like, I don't think so. We don't need to listen to you. You're probably just telling us, you know, nonsense. There was a lot of hints that Sarah was thinking about taking a shot at them. And they ignored it. They ignored it the whole time. And I think he's a party to that, and a Parhardy to that. And I think that's a big mistake. But I think, again, he was getting better as time went on. And I think he was cut out before he was able to really show what he's capable of. There are so few choices to choose from with Big Brother Canada that he ends up high on my list, because I haven't seen many other people that have shown the promise that he has.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're bringing up an interesting point that I think, again, looking at these people who might have gotten taken out due to twists or due to unforeseen circumstances, it's interesting to factor in the potential there as well. I mean, I definitely agree with what you guys have been saying about how this is a guy who was extremely excited to begin with, backed off a little bit, but it's clear that he might have actually backed off too much, that he might not have seen some of the social dynamics in the house. I mean, I think he definitely thought Newport was so secretive that nobody knew about it, and it was very clear that these two guys were hanging out so much that obviously people were putting two and two together. It's really hard to look past this whole idea of voluntarily putting yourself on the block when the point of the game is to not be on the block and to not put yourself up for elimination. And so those are tough sticking points for me, but I mean, I think he had a good head for the game. I'm sure if he's given a second chance for the game, that'd be another podcast for another day, but it'd be really interesting considering that he's sort of like in the Kelly Wentworth type of spot where he was eliminated early, so not a lot of people really know a lot about his game, so he has a little bit of that mystery quality there, but we'll save that for another time. We've given our time to our loyal leader, JP. Let's jump into our top 10 here, guys, and we are starting off with a bit of a doozy here. Our number 10 spot for best Big Brother Canada player so far is the OG winner, Jillian McLaughlin, from Big Brother Canada 1. Brent, you had Jillian at number 8. I had Jillian at number 7. Taryn had Jillian at number 12. Alex did not have Jillian on his list at all. Alex, talk to me a little bit. Why are you harshing on Jillian's game so hard?
Okay, so, you know, it's tough when you're ranking winners along with non-winners, right? Because if I'm ranking winners, I always have Jillian 3rd out of the 3. Now that we're incorporating non-winners, I can really factor in skill sets and what people showed in the game. To me, Jillian showed a lot that I didn't like, and the win was very circumstantial. So it leads me to believe that she couldn't duplicate it in many scenarios. She was extremely fortunate to, first of all, meet the love of her life in the house and use the fact that he happened to be the best player in the season to her advantage. That can't be understated. That's not going to happen most seasons. She was really clueless early on. I don't know if you guys remember, but there was these like coaching sessions where Liza was just browbeating her with basic stuff. Like, you know, Liza had some understanding of the game that Jillian just did not. You know, she's talking about, we need to get behind these big guys and let them take us further. And Jillian's like, but I don't know if I trust them. And it's just, it was just really hard to watch at the time. She wrote a tidal wave of HOHs to the end. And I mean, you guys know that I discount HOHs. Like I feel like the only anyone can be a big player any week. The only difference between doing it from the HOH spot or doing it from the block or anywhere else is that you're doing it from a spotlight. To me, that's the only difference. You can have just as much of an impact either way. So I don't put much credit in her wins or her comp prowess. She was prone to lashing out at people at times. She would be a little impatient. She certainly was not a good liar. A lot of times she'd be like, could you be a pawn for me and cover her face? And I would just, I mean, it's just bad. When I go back and look at the footage, man, there's a lot to not like. Andrew was hopelessly in love with her, even though she was with Emmett. So she was able to like get Andrew's vote, even though they had no right to deserve it. He had no business going with them. She's Jordan Lloyd who can win some comps, basically. So I'm happy to hear you guys tell me why I'm wrong.
All right, Taryn, tell him why Alex is wrong.
I mean, I'm with you for the most part. I just think that there aren't many better choices, frankly. I agree. I don't think she was particularly great at the social game. She made a lot of people very angry. I think they were angrier than they could have justified, but she definitely made them angry, and it wouldn't have surprised me if she had lost the vote without the whole alliance thing. And we know that she would have lost the vote with the alliance thing had there not a mistake have been made. But she's very, the thing that puts her anywhere near this is that I did see a lot of improvement over time. And maybe that's just proximity to Emmett, but we can't be sure. She was very good at the competitions. Again, back-to-back-to-back-to-back wins with Emmett. She was not afraid to cut anybody's throat. The amount of loyalty she managed to get from Andrew and then the amount of loyalty she had from Tala afterward was very good, especially considering she had Emmett right next to her, and Emmett, such a top-class player. She managed to scoop them out from under him, and she had loyalty, more loyalty to their allies than he did, which is pretty impressive. And I think those are the benefits to her. I think, again, for the most part, I'm with Alex. I don't think she's particularly great, but there aren't a lot of choices.
So it's just, yeah, by default, I guess, is Terrence's philosophy behind Jillian here. Brent, you and I had Jillian around the same place. Talk to me a little bit about your thoughts on her game.
Well, I really liked where Jillian ended up. You know, I don't so much like where Jillian started, let's be honest. I mean, she was really new to the game. You know, I actually don't know if she was a recruit or not, or how she even came to be on the show. But I do feel like she got the game by the end. You know, I feel like if she came into another season, she would eliminate some of the mistakes that Alex talked about. You know, particularly, I saw somebody in the chat room say this, and it's very true. She tried to make everybody feel safe, to the point where she was almost delusionally believing that she could actually achieve that. So that was one of the knocks against her. But I mean, I was blown away by the fact that she was still able, you know, by way of Emmett, able to keep Peter Brown's loyalty, because it wasn't just to Emmett. He was also somewhat loyal to Jillian. He liked her very much. He got along with her. And even though Peter should have gone against him, she was able to keep his loyalty so that he didn't use the veto and take out Andrew, who became a key piece to her win going down the stretch. A guy who was, as you say, hopelessly in love with her, and I have no idea why, but, you know, especially right? When you're right there with the milkman, I mean, come on, who are you going to pick, Andrew or the milkman? Come on. So,
well, to be fair, milkman he's not covering himself in olive oil and dancing around, so I don't know if Andrew had any sort of ideas about that.
Yeah, if only, right? Okay. But no, I really liked her. I liked what, and then, I, you know, I am a Comp Beast fan. I, you know, if it happens once, it's a fluke. If it happens twice, if it happens three times, four times, it's like, I got to believe that there's some real a skill set there that is just good at the kind of things that are going to come up in Big Brother. So, you know, I wouldn't give somebody a lot of credit for a win or two, but the fact that she just absolutely blew them away coming down the stretch. It's like, who won HOH? Jillian again. I mean, it wasn't even a surprise. I didn't even have to look on Jokers to find out what happened. It's just like, you know what the answer is going to be, you know? I remember that one episode where they had the dunk tank, and I think Tala was ahead by a point or two going into the end of the episode. And you think, oh, well, maybe this is it. And then, you know, Jillian's the winner again. What do you know? So, I really liked what I saw from her. She has a skill set that's great for Big Brother, and I do feel like she would eliminate some of the mistakes she made at the end of the game if she came back again.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's very indicative that she did not face the vote until the final three. I think this is sort of going back to what you were saying about Ashley Wood before, Brent, that this is a person who is someone who can win competitions, but somehow is really not considered to be the number one target for a lot of people. And maybe that's because of she is a bubbly young woman who happens to be paired up with this, you know, big farm guy. But I think she was able to sort of use that to her advantage. And I do have to sort of count the competition wins as well. Definitely sort of factored into my analysis there. The attractions that I had from her game was that, I mean, there were a couple times when I feel like Emmett was making the decisions over her. I'm thinking all the way back to week two when she won her first HOH. And from what I remember, I don't think she wanted to get rid of Danielle, but Emmett was very adamant about her getting rid of Danielle. And so she got rid of somebody that she could have used down the line. And the fact is, I mean, she took the brunt of getting rid of people like Topaz and the Shield when it came down to it. And that's tough because that's three votes that get, you know, could have. It almost didn't make her win the game. And so that's always a tough aspect to manage in the first place. And, you know, when you're managing those rogue jury votes, there's only so much you can do. But that being said, I'm going to sort of just echo what Brent just said. I was impressed with what she did, you know, and I think there is sort of a strategy in bunking up with this Meat Shield guy. He happens to be one of the best Big Brother players ever, but I mean, there is a strategy in sort of attaching yourself to that hull as a barnacle, because that hull is going to take you across the bay and over to the other coast to sort of use that metaphor. Let's move on to our number nine pick here, guys. This is where things get a little interesting. Our number nine is Zach Olenek. Just got mentioned a little bit of time ago. However, Zach only showed up on two of our list. He showed up on mine as number eight, and on Brent's, Zach Olenek is the third best Big Brother Canada player so far. Brent, I'm going to cede the floor to you. Talk to me all about your thoughts on Zach's game.
The chat room already going crazy. You know, look, I did this with my heart. I'm not going to lie to you guys. I really did. I think there's a lot to like about Zach's game, and I still think it's telling to me that he's such a massive threat, and he's still made it, you know, toward the end of the game. He had no business getting there, really. And he still managed to have enough bonds with people that he was able to avoid the twists definitely going against him. You know, the triple eviction twist, he should have been gone there. And Bruno inexplicably uses the veto on him. Then fast forward to the have-not power. I got the floor, Mary. Just give me a second to get through my speech, and then you can take it apart. So go to the have-not power. You know, Sarah doesn't know what the power is, but Brittany has basically told her in so many words, you know, I'm going to be safe this week. Don't worry about it. Who would we like to take out, quote unquote, next week? And by all accounts, they should have taken out Zach. But instead, they decide to go after Bruno. And why is that? Because both Brittany and Sarah told us in the diary room and in other places in the house that they could get along with Zach. They could speak with Zach on a strategic level, and he was malleable enough to the point where they were willing to work with him and give him the benefit of the doubt when they had a dagger over both of them, and they could literally kill off whoever they wanted. Bruno or Zach was gone from the game. It all just came down to what Sarah and Brittany wanted to do. So I give him a lot of props with the bonds he was able to form in the house. In a game where the twists aren't there, looking at his game in a vacuum, I really like where he ends up. And I think it's a testament to his game, too, that Ashley and Peely, they weren't really willing to go against him. They talked about it at one point. I think for maybe an hour, they were like, yeah, we need to get rid of Zach. And then Ashley's like, you know what? I can't do it. I love him too much. I know we'll lose to him at the end, but we've got to take him to the final three. It's just something I have to do, you know? So I like what I see from Zach's game. I think that he's personable. He's charming. He's persuasive. Like I said, he's malleable to the viewpoints of other people. I think he really got some sense into him when JP was eliminated from the game. And he saw, you know what, this isn't going to be a magic carpet ride to the end. I'm really going to have to fight for this and work for this. And I feel like he made enough adjustments where if another twist doesn't go against him in the have-not power, I feel like he set up pretty well toward the end. So, you know, maybe I had him a little high. But I will say, if I didn't have him high, then probably like Mumsy ends up on the list instead of Zach, and I wasn't having that. So I wanted Zach at number three on my list, and you guys can go to town if you want to, but I liked what I saw from Zach.
All right, Alex, go to town. Talk to me a little bit about why you didn't put Zach on your list.
All right, well, you know, I have Zach at number 21, and, you know, for me, a lot of it comes down to the fact that his entire game is predicated on being a handsome, athletic dude who this younger than average house just all gravitated towards and were dumb enough to believe this time. I don't think it happens in a lot of houses. And I don't think three girls of the cast fall in love with him on a, you know, majority of seasons.
Yes, they do.
All right. Well, I get that you saw what Brittany saw. To me, I was like, when I saw this guy enter the house, I was like, who put Al Gore in a time machine? This guy is wooden.
And stretched him out on a torture rack.
He's wooden with a plastic smile. I didn't see him as a good liar. He averted his gaze all the time when he would get into this stuff. And you make the point about, like, if there wasn't twists, this isn't Big Brother US. This is Big Brother Canada. And he, let me finish. And he's bad, horribly bad at working a camera and a diary room. Canada will never let this guy win Big Brother Canada. Never, ever. A twist will always be introduced to take out a him or an Andrew Gordon or a Tom Plant or anyone who tries to run this game with an iron fist. Guaranteed.
All right, Taryn, you want to hop on Alex's bandwagon there?
I mean, I disagree with your reasoning, but I agree with your stance. Like, I don't think a twist is going to always take him out. We didn't see a twist take him out. In fact, we saw him survive twists. I think twists are way too random and by chance to try to interpret and include, I believe, because you never know. Multiple twists came in that could have hurt his game, but didn't because they came in at the wrong time, because that's just how they work. They're so random. That said, I am definitely not high on Zach's game. You talked about how he got his head in the game after Jordan left, but it was actually the opposite. It was right around that time that he was doing very well. And then he was just like, you know what, Jordan, we have the numbers. We can just win every competition from here on out. He legitimately said that. And that was his plan. And he got about two or three competitions in after that. And then he was a target and he survived about two evictions and then he went home. And that's basically how it happened. You know, Ashley and Peely absolutely would have cut him. They wanted to take him as far as they could. They knew he was going to be a target ahead of them, but they would have taken each other to the end, guaranteed. They knew that they were that they couldn't beat him. Ashley had the loyalty of Peely. In fact, nobody in the diaper lines would have taken Zach. Kevin was going to stab him in the back around the time of the triple eviction. Jordan was going to stab him in the back had he stayed in the game at some point. Zach was the person they put out in front that they knew would take the hits, and it just happened to be that when people went to hit Zach, he happened to be immune, so it hit Jordan, and then it hit Kevin, and then Zach happened to be the last one standing, and then he eventually went out in the way that he should have. And quite frankly, the move to keep Jordan on the block was so terrible. There was zero upside to it in any way, in any shape or form. And anything he tried to do, whether it was with Bruno, anything after that point, he made zero strategic headway. He barely managed to keep Kevin loyal for a couple of weeks when they were winning competitions. And Kevin was, again, right about to stab him in the back. Apart from that, even his own showmance and closest ally after that were going to cut him when they had the opportunity to at Final Three if he wasn't already gone, which he was.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think that I'm going to take Zach's game a little bit like I described Alec and Peter's game beforehand. I think if you look at the first 4 weeks before he won HOH, I feel like Zach is playing one of the best games in there. I mean, he's a part of multiple alliances. And not only that, he's a part of multiple alliances, but he's also not being considered as a target, despite being this athletically big man, which, as we saw from the previous two Big Brother Canada seasons, got targeted right off the bat for various reasons. So I feel like socially and strategically, Zach was playing an awesome game for the first month. And then we take another left turn and he wins HOH and everything kind of gets, shots of sunshine there. And I agree. I mean, I think the JP going up on the block was more of a Parhard thing than a Zach thing, but Zach keeping Jordan on the block was definitely more of a Zach thing. You know, it's sort of like if the powers that be are giving you a literal sign to say you've made a mistake and you don't rectify that mistake, I sort of feel like that's not indicative of great gameplay. I will say that he didn't exactly, even though he might have not been cognizant of his position after Jordan left, I don't think he took his boot lying down. I mean, he did try an albeit failed plan when he was put up at Final Six to sort of concoct this girls alliance and sort of try to throw Godfrey under the bus. And look, I'm going to give him credit with that over what we see with a lot of Big Brother US players who sit there for the entire week saying, woe is me, my game is done. Oh, well, I guess I'll go to jury house. Yeah, I got to give some points to him for at least being able to do that. So that's why he finished in the top 10 for me, where his first 4 weeks combined with his ability to at least, you know, work a little bit towards the end of his game. Though I think there are obviously some big minuses there as he talks about his HOH week. I mean, his alliances were not terribly secret. Not only was there the thing with JP, as we talked about before, but I mean, when you have a showmance, even though it's the Big Brother Canada house where showmances are as prevalent as twists in the house, you're still going to make yourself a big target. And I think he was able to do so because he was so prevalent with Ashley. But Zach was able to squeak his way onto our list. Anything else?
Well, I just wanted to say, like, I have a bit of a problem disputing the notion that he's a gorgeous, you know, athletic, good-looking guy. I mean, you're holding that against him, like, you know, he only got that, you know, got into the game and achieved his position in the game because of who he is. But that's who he is, and he's always going to be that guy, at least for the next 10 years. So, I mean, I don't really have a problem, you know, giving him credit for who he is innately. And I don't know, I mean, I just think that if it wasn't for the twist, I feel like he would have been okay putting JP up. The fact that he couldn't see it is obviously his fatal flaw. You know, after Cindy came back into the house, he has the veto, he has a chance to use it, and he still doesn't use it at that point. But I feel like that's true of everybody on this list, at least everybody who's like below top five. You know, everybody has a fatal flaw. That's a big reason why they didn't win the game. But what I'm giving him credit for, honestly, is, you know, Alex called him wooden. I have to say that I didn't get that from him at all. Maybe I did for the first few weeks, but you know, once he got his butt kicked and JP went out, I really loved what I saw from Zach. I mean, he was always clawing, always fighting to stay in the game. I'll never forget when Bruno used the veto on him and he went in the diary room and absolutely just lit up the place. Like, he was so freaking happy to still be in the game. I love the passion that I saw from him. So, you know, you guys know from Rachel Riley, I love stuff like that. I love people who absolutely will die and do anything to stay in the game. And I didn't see that from a lot of people in Big Brother 3, and I did see it from Zach. So I was really glad to see that.
Yeah, and
I will say that.
Go ahead, Alex.
Oh, I will just say that, you know, if you look at Big Brother 2, pretty much every girl in there was either married or in a relationship. There was no Ashleys, there was no Willows, there was no Brittany's, there was no Nehas. There was no single girls to just gravitate towards Zach because of what you're talking about. So it really is circumstantial to the house they put him in. They put him in a dream house for his skill set, as you're describing.
He also did well with the guys, though. It's not as though he relies on the flirting. I think
but it was
helped
a young, bro-y group, too, which, you know, yeah, you'll get that more often than not. But then my other point is, I think through three seasons, we do have enough information to know Andrew Gordon, Greg Merritt, Tom Plant, Zach Olenek. These are the type of guys that the twists are going to be targeting. Whether or not it affects them directly, it plucked off his allies. And I remember that Canada was gunning for Zach when they were giving Brittany these powers specifically. I remember that.
I don't think Zach falls in that category, though. I do think that there is a scenario where, and again, this is why it's so difficult to incorporate the twists, but like all Zach needs is a better edit. And now all of a sudden, maybe the twist won't target him. And again, even if they do, it's not necessarily going to hurt him anyway. In fact, it might accidentally benefit him. I see him as kind of a Frankie Grande in the beginning of the game, where everybody loves Frankie. Everyone gets along with Frankie. He was doing really well socially, and he had Jordan to guide him strategically. As soon as he stopped listening to Jordan, he completely fell off the wagon because he couldn't do anything. Strategically, he doesn't work.
I do love that Alex called it a dream house when he and Zach has had the comparisons many times. I mean, I'm going to go off of what Brent said a little bit too, and sort of not to preclude my list too much, but I honestly feel like even the people at the top of this list, there are flaws in all of their games, in my opinion. Like, I think if we're putting this next to our Big Brother winner list and our best Big Brothers never win list, I feel like the Americans are going to take a lot of those top spots. So I don't want to say that I don't think we as a collective think any of these games are amazingly perfect, top tier echelon, put their portrait in you know, the Big Brother gold plated Hall of Fame here. They're very good games at the top, but there are, you know, negatives to everyone's games here, and I feel like we were able to point out some big ones with Zach here. Now we've moved on from probably one of our most disputed rankings. Let's move over to a little bit more of a consensus here. This next person appeared on all four of our lists in some sort of capacity. Shazam, it is Arli Shaban. Alex, you ranked him at number 9. Brent had him at number 13. I had him at number 9 as well. Taryn, you had him all the way up at number 6. Taryn, talk to me a little bit about your love for Arli.
Again, I don't really love Arli particularly. It's just a case of, I think I have a top four that is solidly my top four. And then beyond that, it's just kind of, I guess this person might be better than this person. I have him pretty close to where I have Sarah, because I think they had a pretty similar stance in the game. The difference being, I think Sarah is better socially, but Arli was better strategically because he was able to, again, make that jump that Sarah was unwilling to do. He had the killer instinct, to make sure that he wasn't going to stick with the first five. Another thing is that I think that he got beat by Netta. And without Netta there, John trusted him. Netta was the one that was able to recognize Arli as a threat. We need to get Arli out. And she convinced John to do it. And even though Netta was against him, he came very close to convincing those gremlins to keep him in that game. And that would have been devastating to Netta's game. So I give him a lot of credit for he gave Netta a lot of problems. He gave Netta a lot of problems.
I've been there.
Yeah, I just could not find the word.
Yeah, no, look, Big Brother is a type of game where, on paper, it's the game that's all about jumping allegiances, right? To jump from alliance to alliance, to jump from sinking ship to sinking ship. Realistically, that's a very hard thing to do. We've seen players try and fail to be able to get away from alliances only to get dragged down by them. I feel like Arli is one who was able to do so successfully. You know, he saw that the first five was going down, and he like Sarah had outs. He had this alliance with Adele and with John that he was able to sort of rely on and make outs, that he wasn't just inherently up Kenny's butt like Sarah was. And so when the time come to jump ship, he was able to do so successfully, as Taryn just pointed out. So I have to give him a lot of credit to that. I mean, he had a good read of the house those first few weeks. I mean, I think his problem, sort of like what we were talking about with Jordan a little while ago, was that I think he was just very mistakenly thinking he was in control. I mean, we all remember the shirtless monologue in the pantry about, I am in control of this game right now. And I think he very much wasn't. I think he was very much underestimating a couple of players that we're going to talk about soon enough in these rankings. And I think his failure to see that is definitely a slight on his game. Now, Brent, you had Arlie the lowest out of all of us. A little bit about your thoughts on his game.
Well, that's what I can't get over is the shirtless monologue in the room there, where he's just going on about how he's in control of the game when he's clearly not. I was a little bummed that he wasn't able to convince the Gremlins plus Allison to be able to keep him that week. That would have given us a great end game. Instead, he absolutely blows it and they evict him. And then it's just a march to the end for Netta and John. So, I, you know, it depends on who you want to. You want to give blame to Arlie for that, or do you want to give credit to Netta for that? I probably give credit to Netta for that. So, yeah. I don't know. I like what I saw from Arlie's game. It's so funny. There's so many people on this list where, you know, for the first 4 to 5 weeks they were great, you know, and then after that, not so much. And it really goes to what Rob Cesternino says about, you know, the first month just take a nap, because you can't win the game in the first month, but you can definitely lose it. And I feel like that's definitely a case with Arlie. I mean, I'm glad he got off the sinking ship that was the first five, but he never really found a place to land after that. And this is going to be a continuing thing on my list as well. He never really had a good number two. You know, everybody, I feel like people who succeed in Big Brother, they always have a good side man. They always have somebody that they trust implicitly. Arlie always seemed to be freelancing by himself, and I don't know that there was ever really going to be a path to the end for him. So that's why I have him down on my list on number 13.
Alex, what do you think about Arlie?
Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously you guys don't like Alec as much as I do, but I have him next to Alec because I really do see a lot of similarities between Arlie and Alec. I mean, to me, Arlie is like a warmer, albeit less persuasive version of Alec Beal. I think there's a lot of similarities there. I think, you know, both are guys that can let their energy get away from them and rub people the wrong way without realizing it. They're both guys who can get caught up in the moment and allow like showmanship to kind of take sway and allow them to and like override their what they know to be correct strategically, because they're both very, very astute minds when it comes to the game. You know, and yeah, Arlie, you know, he was very smart to know to jump on the first five. You know, he read the house a little bit, but more than that, he read Canada. He was able to read Canada's HOH as a sign and know to kind of just stay a step ahead. And, you know, it's unfortunate, because I think if the first five had been able to ride it out, he was maybe set up even a little better. But, you know, it's possible that he would have, you know, either way, I think he was in a good position. He just had to go one way or the other, and the chips kind of fell where they may. Obviously, you know, Allison and Rochelle and Sabrina make a bad decision when they don't save him, you know, and I think a lot of that's on them, but certainly you can say he's a little bit culpable in not being able to successfully convince them. And I think, you know, those few knocks are enough to kind of keep him from the top echelon for me.
And you bring up a very good point. This is something that, you know, this is the first time that I had done these rankings since I hadn't appeared on a podcast with you guys yet. But that was something that I was really trying to compartmentalize here, is sort of at what point when a game move is made, how much is it the fault of the person who is on the receiving end of it? And how much is more credit given to the person who made the move? And I feel like that's a case with Arlie here. You know, some of us have talked about it was Arlie's fault that the Gremlins didn't and Allison didn't side with him and kept him. Some were saying, no, it's more so speaking to Netta and John's game to, you know, convince them not to get rid of him. So I feel like it's sort of a game of, you know, six in one hand, half a dozen in the other, in terms of figuring out with each move, is it a person's fault or is it one person's, you know, credit to their game? So I feel like there'll be some more decision notes down the line that we can certainly talk about that. Anything else about Arlie before we move on to lucky number 7?
I mean, I think as far as the Gremlins go, he came very close to getting them. And John and Netta in particular, they put in so much work to counteract what he was doing. I really think it's a case of he would have had them if he wasn't up against Netta and John together.
I agree. I think that was their finest hour, yeah. To me, was the week that they were able to get Arlie evicted. It was just from the beginning to targeting him to the end. I know we're going to talk about this later with John and Netta, but still, just it was amazing to see them do that.
And what a terrible move by the Gremlins to not keep him.
There's a reason why they're not in our top 10 nor honorable mentions, despite making good TV. If this was the good TV list, they'd probably be right at the top. So let's move on to lucky number 7, which is interesting considering that some might say how arguably lucky this person was. It is the winner of Big Brother Canada 3, Sarah Hanlon. Now, Alex, you had Sarah at number 7. I had Sarah at number 6. Brent had Sarah all the way up at number 2. Taryn did not have Sarah on his list whatsoever. Alex, let's start in the middle here. Talk to me on your thoughts about Sarah's game.
Okay, yeah. Grown up Lisa Simpson. I always loved that description. Very cromulent, I thought. Sarah is someone who has a great BS detector. I think that's the first place you start when you're listing her pros. That's something that Sarah had maybe better than anyone I've ever watched the game. She sniffed out lies. Maybe not. In Big Brother Canada terms, she's up there in the top echelon when it comes to detecting bullshit. However, and knowing when she's being lied to. However, there were a few times when she really had the social ability to convince people to her way of thinking, even when she saw what needed to occur. And there were a lot of times, especially as the game went on and she began to feel ostracized and persecuted, that she began to misread people and even like a little bit assume the worst in people because of kind of the way they had burned her up to that point, which is understandable. But I think it speaks a little bit to kind of her game. Certainly, I think, you know, the alliance named Fembots became a bit of a joke when, you know, they were so emotional after talking about how they were going to be circuitry and wires. So I think, you know, a lot of the emotion of kind of going to the bedroom, going to the have not room, isolating yourself with Brittany, that's obviously not good. If Brittany isn't really hooked up this season, I think Sarah just can't win. I mean, she really put herself out on a limb week 2 when, you know, obviously she doesn't know that it's going to be a public vote. But she still doesn't need to vote for Neha there. She knows Neha's going. And that show of loyalty, while sweet and very, very nice, is, you know, a game tanker. It's just not a good move in week 2. You know, she allowed her only 2 numbers in Brittany and Willow to go, you know, Brittany evicted Willow. I don't know how you allow that to happen. That's just, you know, obviously you're better than they are. You know, they're not on this list and you are. So some degree of that falls to you as the linchpin of the relationship to hold that together. You know what I mean? And obviously she wasn't able to do that. And then you look at the twists, the Cindy return. We talked about it a little bit with the information from the people voted out. That's ridiculous. The triple eviction, pretty ridiculous. Canada, the whole coup de Brittany, utterly ridiculous. And then Godfrey messing up at the final 3 and taking her to the end. Wow. Like, that's a lot of things that have to go her way that are not little things, major, major things. So I like a lot of the skills. And I think unlike some people, she could definitely win a game where twists don't go her way. But I thought that she wouldn't have won this game if twists don't go her way.
All right, Brent, let's continue on the positive path here. Tell me why Sarah Hanlon is your second best, in your opinion, Big Brother Canada player so far.
Well, I really feel like looking out at the 3 seasons that we've had on Big Brother Canada, I cannot find another person who is so relatable and likable. I mean, these are the things that she has going for her. Even when people were working against her, people still respected her. They still liked her. Even when she was absolutely their enemy in the game, they still respected her. And that's not necessarily true of many people in the game. You know, Big Brother 1, you know, nobody respected Emmett and Jillian, you know, when they were working against them. I think a lot of people were pissed at John and Netta when they were working against them. But here Sarah was able to get the respect of the jury even when she was going against them. And I think that's because of the bonds that she was able to form with people. You know, a very underrated aspect of Big Brother is getting people to like you and being able to empathize with them. And Sarah was able to do that more so than anybody. I really feel like that she was able to form relationships with people to the point where they really felt good about themselves by working with her and by voting for her at the end. It's true that she got some lucky breaks along the way. I grant you that. But I really feel like that the mistake that she made during week 2 where she voted for Neha and showed her cards a little bit and ostracized herself from the house, I don't think she makes that move today. I really don't. I think that she grew as the game went on. And I also have a bit of a problem with holding her accountable for Brittany putting up Willow, Because at that point in the game, if you remember, from our point of view, they were tight. I'm speaking about Sarah and Brittany. But within the house, Sarah didn't exactly feel the love coming from Brittany. She was definitely an ally, but they were not a final two, you know, fembot alliance. That's not the way that it was in the house. It's the way we wanted it to be. It's the way Canada wanted it to be. But that's not the reality of the situation in the house. So I have no problem. Actually, I give Sarah credit because even though she read the situation incorrectly, she was willing to vote out her friend Willow at that point. I know that it didn't work out in her favor, and I know she shouldn't have done it, but I love the fact that she was willing to set aside her relationship and stab her in the back and get rid of her because she felt that she had to do it in order to better her place in the game. So I really like what I saw from Sarah. You know, if you want to throw knives and tomatoes at me for putting her at number two, that's fine. That's why there are somebody said in the chat that number, I think it was Tyler, said Sarah being at number two is too high, but her not being on the list is not fair at all. And I think, you know, that's why there are four of us here, people. You know, we average out, and I feel like eventually we get it right.
All right. Looks like Taryn Armstrong is stocked with tomatoes and knives. So I'm gonna let him speak a little bit about why Sarah Hanlon did not make his list.
Okay, so this is gonna be a harsh one. And listen, I think Sarah's great. I've talked to her. She's an extremely nice, likable person, and it's unfortunate that she's going to disagree with me about this and will probably hate my guts. That being said, I have to go through her game to explain to you how every single decision she made was wrong. Every single time she made a decision, it was the wrong decision. She made bad decisions throughout. She's on the block with Johnny. She is starting again. Her benefit is she is good. She has good awareness. She is likable. Those are her two good qualities. But she's on the block with Johnny. She starts to figure out that Zach and Johnny and Jordan are they're not super. They're not on the up and up. And so she decides to explain this all to Johnny. So Johnny now has all this ammunition, which he uses against Sarah. He tells Jordan and Zach, "Listen, Sarah just told me that you guys are the worst." And she's really lucky that they didn't believe him because they thought he was just trying to, you know, say whatever he needed to get off the block. There's some, you know, accountability. She was likable enough that they didn't think she would turn on her. But bad move to tell him in the first place. Why give your opposition ammunition against you? Then we go to twist number one. She's in the house and Cindy comes back into the game. And this is the most absurd scenario we've ever seen in Big Brother, where Cindy leaves, she talks to the other pre-jurors, and Neha instructs her explicitly, you can only go in, you can only work with Sarah, only tell Sarah this information, and only
I'm
work
so
for
tired
Sarah.
Of hearing that. Oh my God.
You can be tired of hearing of it, but it's a fact.
I love you for it. But like during this podcast, you've already said that three times. And it's almost like
I've
a little speech like Marco Rubio that you have like memorized. Well, I've heard it before.
We're getting political here on the podcast.
I'm just like, it's like, I'm so tired of hearing about the fact that, you know, that Neha told her this and Cindy had to do that.
It's what happens.
I mean, you know, ultimately, Cindy gets to make her own decision there. Neha has fuck to do with it.
No,
seriously.
Neha absolutely had to do it. If Neha wasn't there, it wouldn't have happened. And if Cindy hadn't happened to be the person that goes back into the game, Sarah wouldn't have had that information. She wouldn't have made the move against Jordan, which was a bad move anyway.
The chat room is getting mad at me for interrupting you. Go ahead.
Jordan was on her side. Jordan wanted to work with her long term. Godfrey had zero intention of working with Sarah. He didn't care about her. He would have done anything to get ahead. And she chose to go with Godfrey over Jordan because she believed Godfrey. Moving on, and not to mention, she blows everything up that she knows immediately. She gets rid of the pawn that she was just gifted right off the bat by doing this move. Cindy leaves the next week, and all of a sudden, all of the advantages that were just given to her are gone. Twist number two, the triple eviction comes up, and she's lucky enough that Brittany wins because she was on the list of people that could have been targeted in that triple eviction. Brittany wins the HOH, and she puts up, Kevin and Peely and Zach.
Yes.
Bruno wins the veto, takes out Zach, and Brittany puts up Willow. Sarah knew that Brittany and Willow didn't like each other. She made zero effort in repairing that relationship to make sure something like this wouldn't happen. Willow goes on the block, and she decides to vote Willow out. Even if you think that had she had the right read on the situation, it was the right move. It wasn't. It was the wrong move and the wrong read. Even if she had the right read, it wasn't the right move because Ashley is the person going after her the most. Then maybe Bruno and Zach. Peely, if she's still in the game with Kevin, Kevin wants to work with her and she can't even see that. So she decides she's willing to sacrifice her closest ally in order to get rid of Kevin, who is probably her next closest ally after Brittany and Willow. Then we go to twist number three. She's about to lose Brittany because of this terrible triple eviction decision. She's about to lose her biggest ally because she happened to win this veto. She would have been gone had she not. And the Big Brother Canada production gods, they gift her this coup de Brittany, and she gets to take out Bruno. And, you know, maybe taking out Bruno was the right move. Maybe taking out Zach was the right move. There wasn't really a way that she could mess that up, but it wouldn't have surprised me if she had. Then after all that wrong decisions, twists, making sure she gets this far, there's a competition spree. Brittany and her go back to back. She's immune from the triple eviction to the final three. She is immune the entire time. She's a target the entire time. She's probably the number one target for most people the entire time. But twists and competitions kept her immune until the final three. During this time, she's constantly trying to make deals with people. She's constantly trying to put ideas in people's heads, and it's not working at all. Zach is constantly able to stop her ability to put ideas in people's heads. Everyone thinks just, oh, that's Sarah. She's just, you know, she's trying to persuade us, but it's not going to work. If you look at her game as a whole, there's not a single move, there's not a single thing that she was able to do that wasn't aided by either a twist or a competition. She was never able to get anything done socially once. The only thing that even comes close is Godfrey taking her to the end at final three, but we don't really know what happened there, and Godfrey's explained his reasoning, which has nothing to do with what Sarah's tactic was, which was to threaten her jury vote, which we know has been historically very poor at getting results. We have no reason to believe Godfrey would lie about this. He admitted to plenty other faults in his interview with Jordan, and he likes Sarah. I don't know why he would intentionally try to not give her credit for something that happened. Just as a whole,
what did Godfrey say was the reason, ultimate reason why he took Sarah to the end?
It was all about Ashley.
I've heard a couple different things.
It was all about Ashley because he knew that Ashley was in a showman's and showman's have won both times. He knew that Ashley had a guaranteed amount of votes. And he just thought, I can't take Ashley with the showmans. I have to go with Sarah because I know that she was benefited by a lot of twists, and hopefully people will see that. And, you know, unfortunately, they didn't. And we've also seen that the jurors we saw that part of the reason Godfrey lost against Sarah was because he had Bruno in the jury house annoying people so much that they didn't even want to hear the benefits of Godfrey's game. There's just there's not a single like pure piece of good gameplay that we saw from her. And I think that her likability and her awareness make her close to that final, you know, top 13. But I don't think she deserves to be in it, even though I think she's a great person. It's unfortunate that she might not like me after this.
Can I just respond to something really quickly? I don't think it's fair to necessarily take away Sarah's ability to get Godfrey to take her to the end, because I know what Godfrey said in the moment, that it was about showmances. But right after the show, when he's talking to the interviewer, they said, you know, why did you take Sarah to the end? He said, you know, I really like Sarah the best. I really couldn't betray her. I was fine going to the end with her. I was never going to betray Sarah in that spot. That's what he said to two of the Big Brother interviewers right after the show.
But that's
right
what I'm saying.
He
does like Sarah. He has no reason to lie now. He talked about his reasoning, which was all about Ashley. Obviously, he likes Sarah as well, but he also liked Ashley.
So he was lying after it?
It's not that he was lying. He likes Sarah. That's what I'm saying. But there was nothing that she did to convince him. It wasn't that her likability that made him take her. It was Ashley's jury votes that he knew she had because of her showmance and her alliance.
Well, he was wrong. But anyway.
But I mean, even if I concede the point, even if I concede the point and say that she was the one that convinced Godfrey to take her, that's not a whole lot. That's one thing. Everything else is discredited because of the twists and the competitions. And she's
okay. So here's the thing. I feel like there's a bit of a dichotomy between the way we view the game. I view her game on a holistic basis. I like what I saw from her as a whole. I'm not going to pick her game apart. And you know, there was a better move here.
But she made the wrong move in every scenario, every opportunity.
I dispute that. Okay, I don't agree with you on all those counts. But what I'm saying is that I feel like you look at it from more of a rote point of view, where you're looking at there's a path here and a path here, and which path is best. I look at it from a more holistic point of view, like she had other intangible parts to her game that you're not giving her credit for. And in this instance, I think that even though there were two paths in front of her, and maybe this one was better and maybe this one was worse, taking the worst one was not necessarily a bad play in the long game.
She was a target after she made those moves. She was a target for the rest of the game. And without the twists and without the competitions, she would have gone home.
I don't dispute that, but I still like what... I'm not arguing the fact that the twist benefited her. I grant you that. What I'm trying to say is that I feel like that in any season, you know, where like if Sarah played 100 times, I feel like she would do really, really well. And that's because of the bond she's able to form with people and how much they like her. And you can't say that about a lot of people in the house. Most of the time after people stab you in the back, you do not want to vote for them. People couldn't wait to vote for Sarah. So,
Because she was an underdog.
Really like,
it was the same way they would have voted for Spencer in Cagayan.
Wow. I feel like I'm going to have to imbibe in some of Sarah's product after hearing all these words being thrown back and forth. I know. I mean, this is sort of awesome. This is a really heated debate. I absolutely love this. I mean, I think I think Alex and I are kind of like split in the middle here between these two camps. If I could speak on behalf of Alex, I mean, I think that, in terms of likability, I do agree that I think if we're building another Frankenstein player and we're taking aspects from international editions as well, I think Sarah has a certain affability about her. She has a certain likability. She has a very, you know, hey, dude, what's up type of aspects that you wouldn't see necessarily in a lot of those other players in Big Brother Canada 3 that, granted, yes, in the long term, I don't think people were saying, well, I like Sarah more, so let's keep her around. But I feel like there are certain subtle psychological implications that happen sometimes with people when they think like, you know, you're stuck in this house with people for a long time. Sometimes you do want to say, like, you do think unconsciously, well, maybe I want to keep Sarah just because, you know, she's a more likable person. Again, it's not an indicative swaying factor, but it still might incorporate it in there. Though I do agree. I mean, there's a myriad of bad decisions on her part. I mean, I think it's okay in a Big Brother player's book to take out one of your stronger allies in order to further yourself in the game. Drew taking out Diane. I mean, but if you do that, you take him out at what, like 3, 5, 4? She did this at 8/9. I mean, that's pretty early in the game to still do so. I do have to give her some points for her comp wins. I think for not having a very good showing in the beginning, I think she was able to string together a really good amount that made her be safe.
A couple, and most of them were luck-based.
Yeah, I mean, it's at least you have to give that to her at least a little bit in terms of she was able to string together some wins, which gave her a better resume at the end of the day. You know, she didn't win too much more than Godfrey, which we'll talk about, I'm sure, in a little bit. But she still had something on her resume to speak about, which speaks something to her as a Big Brother player. I mean, I think I put her right in the middle of my top 13, which I think is a good representation of the fact that there are good things and there are bad things about her. But she is on our list. No matter what Taryn may dispute, she is on our list. Let's segue into finishing up the first half of our top 10 list with number 6. We're going back to more of a consensus here. Here is someone that was on all of our lists from the same season as Sarah. It is Kevin Martin, the polka player. Taryn and I both had him at number 10. Brent had him at number 7. Kevin Martin is Alex Kidwell's best Big Brother Canada player. So Alex, I'm gonna give this over to you, man. talk to me about why Kevin is in your opinion the best Big Brother Canada player we've had so far.
Okay, so I know this is gonna be very controversial, and you know, maybe I went crazy during the blizzard when I was snowed in for an entire week and watching Big Brother Canada. It's entirely possible. However, I saw a lot that I liked from Kevin on the rewatch. I mean, a lot. I think the two people that I have a best feel for their game are the two people that were screwed the most and help the most, because I believe I've seen Brittany's best case scenario for Big Brother, and I've seen Kevin's worst case scenario for Big Brother. And Kevin made it very far despite a laundry list of horrible circumstances that I'm about to go into right now. So in my estimation, Kevin, I think he's up there for worst luck in the history of North American Big Brother. He's right up there with some of the people that have gotten screwed because of some of the major twists that have hit. He had multiple major twists hit and was able to roll with a bunch of them. You give him any help or even just don't hinder his game, I think he probably wins this game. I think he was well positioned at pretty much every turn. And when things hit him, he bounced back consistently. The Chop Shop targets him first, which is horrible luck. Actually, the fact that a bros group forms on day three and doesn't include him is horrible luck.
It's not
the
luck, fact that,
but it is kind of luck because, you know, he's not David Gurton. He's not David Gurton. He's not the one bro that's not able to play that you don't bring into the group. They just didn't bring him in. They should have brought him in. And later they tried to bring him in. So it was an oversight on their part, I think. Bros, all this goes to say that a lot of times, if he were to start a game, a bros group would bring him in. They didn't this time. That's bad luck. He's encouraged to pop balloons on day two and be seen as sketchy. That's bad luck. He wins the second HOH accidentally and is made to make his nominations instantly. That's awful, awful luck. Then, you know, Johnny is taken out by Bruno for Brittany's move, which is, again, bad luck. They just saw Brittany as so utterly useless that she shouldn't be the target, even though it was retroactive to her HOH, which was literally, I mean, they literally targeted Johnny for what Brittany had done. I mean, he obviously ran Peely's HOH. He's able to adjust when Johnny goes out and bring in Peely and run that, use the Peely relationship to ingratiate himself to the Zach Ashley dynamic. He wins another random HOH. And at that point, he takes out Bobby, who was targeting him, and is able to really, you know, take that spot, wedge himself into Zach, and do exactly what he needs to do to stay afloat at every level. He had votes to stay. I mean, without the triple, he's probably in good shape. But the triple hits. And again, another horrible instance. And I didn't even bring up Cindy coming back in the house with the obligation to take him out that he's only able to sniff out by being in the bathroom at the right place at the right time. But he uses that information perfectly. I mean, you can say that he heard everything he needs to hear, but if he doesn't sell it properly, and I can name right now a list of Big Brother Canada players who would not get the information over in the way they need to, then he goes home anyway. And he had no problems with that. He, to me, demonstrated so much skill on a season where everything went against him that if a few things went his way, I think he's really going to crush it. And that's why he's my number one player.
So I will say, I think, you know, you said he might be the unluckiest player in North American Big Brother. I'll say he has the luckiest bowels in North American Big Brother player history, because I mean, I think that week two was a little touch and go, even though I know Bobby was sort of considering Cindy, even though he had the weird idea of I'm just going to nominate the first two people that left that competition. I mean, if Kevin stayed on that block after that veto and Johnny didn't take him up, there was a very good chance that Kevin could have gone, just because, I mean, I do think that, Alex, some things might not have swung his way. I do agree with that. But the fact is, he made himself very prevalent in the first few weeks. And again, if we're putting himself in this category of Zach Olenek, Andrew Gorton, Tom Plant, big bro-y, or not bro-y, but more athletic guys that sort of stick out like sore thumbs, that's not a thing you want to do. That's what sort of led Tom and Andrew to both kind of self-destruct, is that they really put themselves out there. And so I think, considering Kevin's both background and physicality, the thing he had to do was put himself in the background. And not only could he not because of circumstances, he chooses to pursue the showmance with Pilar. And then, as we keep talking about, showmance is pushing you out into the forefront of Big Brother Canada, as history has shown. So I think that, you know, he's not making things that much easier for himself. And I mean, also, when he was HOH, he decides to target Bobby over Godfrey. I have some qualms with that. I mean, yes, maybe if you look at them from his point of view, they might look like the same type of person. But I mean, Godfrey has shown so much more adeptness. Even the week before, he was able to blindside the Diaper Alliance and survive. You're going to target Bobby? Bobby! Ass, cheeks, waxed Bobby? That's there's no reason for you to do that. So I think that Kevin has showed some skills. You know, his career has a natural skill set that lets you thrive in Big Brother. He was able to showcase that off. But the fact is that I think, yes, something the ball didn't bounce his way, but when he got the ball, sometimes he popped the ball and just threw the ball down the ground and said, like, well, I guess the game's over. And the game was over for him in that regard. So that when the triple eviction rolled around, he was one of the first big targets right out of the gate. Taryn, you had Kevin in a similar type of place as me. What are your thoughts you have about his game?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think Kevin is one of the most promising players I've ever seen. He had so much potential that went unrealized. I think his biggest flaw is that he was so complacent in the game and he really laid back and was not proactive about doing things. And that was ultimately his downfall. It was unlucky, the various twists that happened, and the triple eviction was very unlucky for him. But there were a lot of things he could have done to prevent that from happening. Like I mentioned, he was probably Sarah and Brittany's closest ally beyond Willow, but he didn't let them know. He hinted at it, but he didn't overtly let them know. And because of that, they thought he was a bigger threat than Ashley, who was actively coming after them. That's a big mistake. And he also played with Jordan for, you know, almost half the game, thinking that he was his number one ally, where really Jordan was more loyal to Zach. And the only reason Jordan ends up switching his allegiance is because Zach totally screws up. There's a lot of things that he missed out on because he wasn't on top of the game. He was hanging back. He got distracted by Peely. And those are faults that I couldn't give to that I don't see in my top four. And I couldn't put him above them because of that.
Yeah. Brent, what are your thoughts?
I don't know. You know, he's a bit of an enigma to me. I have him on my list. I feel like, you know, he's probably like an above average player, but there's just something about Kevin Martin that I feel like in any season of Big Brother is going to be, he's going to be not trusted by people. I feel like that he's always going to be caught. He always looks like he's up to something, you know, even during the bloom popping escapade. I feel like he didn't do a very good job of selling that. And I also question the move to even take the offer in the first place. I mean, it's $1,000. That's all they offered him. You know, we'll give you $1,000 if you go out and blow off your game. Oh, okay, let's do that. Sounds good. And, you know, I was watching the Big Brother Canada 3 finale last night from, and I, by the way, I didn't even know how I was not invited to that because you two were on, like, going on about different stuff. And I can't
you
get over
the fact.
You would
have praised Sarah. That was.
Oh my God. And I needed to be there too, because you guys were verbally masturbating to Godfrey. But,
well, you're here now. You're here now, Brent.
So I don't know. I just, like I said, I feel like there's something untoward about him, where you just like, you feel like he's always up to something and you're just never going to trust him. The fact that he ended up in a showman's with Peely is sort of like mind blowing to me, because I don't feel like that was ever really in his plans, and it's not something that he intended on doing. It was just sort of something that happened. And I feel like in any other season of Big Brother, he's not going to be able to have that. And I don't know where he goes from there. So I hear what Alex is saying. I think that there are some good things to like about his game. I don't necessarily agree that he got unlucky during the triple eviction, and here's why. Because I feel like at that point that if – and I don't know for sure what's going to happen, but if it's just a regular eviction and there are two people up for eviction, it's always going to be Zach and Kevin who are nominated at that point. And then what happens? Is Bruno not saving Zach at that point? I mean, or is he? Because if he is, then Kevin's still out of the game. So I don't know. I don't know that he necessarily got screwed by the triple eviction. And I will also say that we knew the triple eviction was coming before they even had the competition. So, we, you know, it was all in the up and up. Anybody could have won that. And Kevin just got the brunt end of it there. So, I don't know.
Which is unlucky,
I don't
think he's not, to be fair.
I don't think he's number one. Well, you know, this is a good point to talk about this, because someone said this in the chat room. I mean, Taryn, it sounds like you totally discount luck. And I feel like there is an element
where
I feel like there is an element of people that make their own luck. I mean, do you not see
that?
Or do
that's
you just
not
totally
luck.
Blow that off?
I don't see that.
You can make your own luck that. In the sense that Kevin – if he had put himself in a scenario where there was only one person that could have won that triple eviction and that person happened to win, he made his own luck in the sense that the odds were in his favor, but he still got unlucky that it didn't work out.
All right.
So, Alex, since Kevin is your number one, I'm going to give you the last word on him. You've heard all of our arguments. Bring us home on Kevin Martin.
Cool. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I understand that it was going to be a controversial opinion. And, I really do believe that, of course, I'm ranking a lot on hypothetical and a lot on, kind of prospective, the idea of like, if you let everyone play 100 times, who's going to win the most? I really do think it's Kevin. You know, Mike, you made the point that, Kevin is like these other big athletic guys. To me, the big difference is those guys really tried to run an alliance from the head. And Kevin was very, very adamant about never being seen that way. You know, you ask why he takes the deal for the balloon popping. He recognizes the value of playing the DR and being Canada's buddy. If he doesn't take that deal, he alienates Canada. And that's undisputable from my perspective. I mean, it really is a situation where Kevin was zigging and zagging constantly, from my perspective, to navigate pitfalls. And they just caught up with him eventually. I would love to see him come back and play in a season where there aren't so many pitfalls. And I think it would be nothing but impressive to watch.
All right, gentlemen, we are in our top five, baby. And Brent, I'm sorry, but prepare for verbal masturbation because we are at number five, the Lady Pleaser, Godfrey Manguiza, runner-up of Big Brother Canada 3. I had Godfrey at number five. Alex, you had Godfrey at number four. Taryn had Godfrey at number three. Godfrey Manguiza did not show up on Brent Wolgamott's list. Brent, let's start with you. Why is Godfrey not on your list?
Well, hold on. I wrote something down, so let me bring it up here. Okay, that's what I want to read.
He did it
just
to spite Godfrey.
Yeah, yes. All right. So someone said this once. It's hard to blame Godfrey too much because you never know what the jury's going to respect. I mean, ultimately, you have to be able to read people going out of the house, and you have to be able to predict who they're going to respect more. Furthermore, Godfrey was unable to aspire to Sarah's level of personal connection. That was said by Taryn Armstrong at the Big Brother Canada 3 finale. And yeah. I think we really have no further way to look to think about how bad Godfrey's game was than he, on a scale of one to woo.
He would have beat Ashley.
I know. And he doesn't take this opportunity to do it. He just like totally blows and he pulls like a woo and takes Tony to the end.
It's
for
not
God's
a
sake.
Woo.
Oh my God, it was totally.
The receipts.
Let's go back to week one. Week one, Godfrey is first of all, I love Godfrey. Great television, fun guy, awesome, really handsome, but he's a terrible Big Brother player. And you need no further look than the week one, day four. It's before the feeds are on, so we're going by what other people have told us, and Godfrey has told us that this is true. He stands up in a house meeting and decides that it's a good idea to try to get the house to flip from voting out Risha to voting out Peely. And oh my God, Peely's sitting right there. And he thinks this is a good idea to do this in front of everybody. I mean, like, it's so bad, it's good. It's just terrible.
Crazy like a fox.
It's good television, I'll give you that. If it had been on, if they showed it on TV, it would have been great.
Tony said top five to the other tribe. Like, there are moves that people make that doesn't make Tony a terrible player.
I'm not saying he's a terrible player.
You just did.
I think
he said
he's a bad
player.
I don't know. There's a difference between his game and his ability as a player, but I digress. Okay, so fast forward to the week where he's eventually saved in favor of JP going out of the house. If you want to talk about twists, that never happens without Cindy coming into the house and saving his butt at that point. And by the way, fast forward to the finale when he's asked a question by Cindy, when she said, would you have been able to save yourself without me coming back into the house? And he totally blows the question and says, yes, Cindy, thank you for that. You were great. But basically, I didn't need you. I would have been able to do it without you at that point. And, totally loses any hope of getting anybody else's vote on the jury. Like, he just came off as snide. And here's the thing. Ultimately, as a player, you have to be able to garner the respect of the people who are playing with you in the house. I think you three fell in love with Godfrey from the DR. The Godfrey that was playing the game was the Godfrey that other people saw, and they didn't like what they saw. They didn't see anything from his game. They thought he was the male Victoria. And as Alex said on the Big Brother 3 Canada finale, if the fans think you're the male Victoria, maybe there's something to what the jurors are thinking. So I can't imagine that Godfrey is in the top five of all three of your lists, and I'm the only one who's dissenting. I really do feel like that you're ranking his DR and what he was telling us he was going to do rather than what he actually did. And then for him to blow it at the end, I don't know. I really don't think that this game was all that great. I really don't.
So, as if you guys don't know, last week Godfrey did a sit-down interview with Jordan where he did talk about, in addition to some interesting stories, a lot about his point of view from the game. Alex, did you listen to that podcast? And if you did it have any sort of effect on your ranking of him overall?
You know, not really, because I felt like I got a lot of, you know, reaffirmation of kind of what I already thought about him. I mean, he knew what he was doing. I really believe that this is, you know, and obviously there's two schools of thought on Godfrey, and you're going to subscribe to one of them, and that's going to dictate where you have him on this kind of a rankings, at towards the top or middle slash bottom. Either you think Godfrey was, you know, Don Quixote and was just an idiot and had no idea what he was doing and was just kind of like dancing, prancing throughout the house, just, you know, oblivious to everything. Or you're in the school of thought that I believe me and Taryn are in that he's an Andy Kaufman level genius who was playing a Don Quixote character. And the DR is the evidence. They didn't see it in the house because he didn't want to show it in the house. He was perfectly content being seen as a male Victoria. The downfall came in that he was so good at concealing his awareness. He was just too good. They weren't ever able to see how badly he was hoodwinking them, because as they left the house, they still had the blindfolds on. And by the final jury speech, he wasn't really given opportunity to articulate anything or, you know, really explain anything. And the blindfold stayed on as to his game until people were able to go back and watch the tapes. And by and large, when people went back and watched, everyone kind of did a 180 on Godfrey's game for the most part. From what I saw on Twitter, a lot of people that used to say, you know, Godfrey wasn't doing anything in the house now say, oh, I see, Godfrey actually was more active than I realized. That kind of stuff, what he did in the first week, the standing up, the being crazy, you know, Jordan said he had like an alliance with everyone on day one. That disarms everybody. That teaches everyone that Godfrey is not to be feared in the house. That just, you know, makes him a laughing stock, and that makes him free to walk around the house and have conversations with everybody about taking out JP once Cindy comes back and nobody suspects. So to me, it really just comes down to, do you think Godfrey is, you know, Canada's Dr. Will in the sense that he is playing so much that he's not playing, or do you just think he's not playing? And to me, it's more the former than the latter.
So, Taryn, you had Godfrey ranked the highest out of all of us. He was your number three in terms of best players. Talk to us a little bit about your thoughts on this game.
You know, it's interesting. I actually don't necessarily praise him as much as Alex is. I don't really see him as an Andy Kaufman figure. I see him as he's a lot more intelligent than you give him credit for. But a lot of the moves he made were not necessarily on purpose. I think that move in the beginning of the game, it was a mistake. He admitted as much in his interview. It was a bad move. It happened to work out in his favor. As the game went on, he got better and better, and he started to realize exactly how he could play this game so that he could always play the middle and he could guarantee his survival up until the end. I again agree. The Cindy twist benefited him. I think without the Cindy twist, he probably leaves there. And maybe we're not talking about him as one of the greater players. However, the circumstances it took for him to be in that situation in the first place were so out of left field and so particular that I don't discredit him as much as I might discredit somebody who was the number one target of everybody in the house, like Sarah. As the game went on, he got better and better at playing people off of each other. I didn't particularly like his DRs. I didn't think they were particularly informative. I disliked Godfrey when he beat Jordan in the eviction. I didn't like that he was celebrating. I was like, no, I was a fan of Jordan. I was like, wow, why are you keeping Godfrey? This is the worst. I appreciated Godfrey's gameplay, and that's what kept me on board with him as time went on. I liked what I saw of him in the house. The way that he was able to lie to Zach and keep Zach disarmed, despite the fact that he was telling everyone he was going after him. People were saying, Godfrey's terrible at this game. He's constantly saying he's going to get Zach out of the house, but he doesn't do anything. That was the point. He was pretending that he was going after Zach, but actually taking Zach out didn't benefit him in any way for a very long time. And then when we get to the end, again, I think huge mistake to take Sarah. I think that he should have read the jury better, and I think that taking Sarah was a really bad move. But everything else adds up to the point where I think he's a very good player. I had him ranked third because there's one person who I had relatively equal with him, and then the rest were a little lower. Again, I don't think Godfrey necessarily ranks with the top of the US players. I think the two above him rank better with them, but I do think he's one of the best Canada players because, again, there's not as many options to choose from.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. And it's interesting because, to me, I think Godfrey was playing a good strategy. It was just a non-winning strategy. I think, like what you were talking about, I think one of the 49 laws of power, or 48, sorry, I'm thinking about the Rob Cesarino and Stephen Fishback audiobook still on sale on robhaswebsite.com. One of the big first laws of power there is make a spectacle. And I think that Godfrey, through his personality, was able to do so. And I will fully admit that I think one of the reasons why I ranked him so high is because he defied my expectations. I mean, a year ago at this point, I was previewing Big Brother Canada 3 with Rob, reading his bio about how he's going to plant a wedding ring in somebody's suitcase and try to accuse someone of having a previous engagement at home. And I was like, and I've said on the podcast, this guy's gone. This guy is a ridiculous person. He's going to flame out spectacularly. I can't wait to see it. And the fact that he was able to, yes, he had these horrible first few days where he was completely overplaying his hand. But the fact that he was, we talked about people that were able to adapt and learn. He was able to dial it back significantly and play a little more under the radar, which is what he needed to do, and let everyone else sort of, you know, ping each other while he's just sort of lying there watching it all happen. Unfortunately, the downside of that is while you're playing that sort of subversive game, it's not going to necessarily translate into a great strategy when you're in front of a jury trying to explain yourself. I think he was sort of damned if he did and damned if he didn't. I think both Ashley and Sarah and even Brittany had better stories in front of a jury than Godfrey did, which was unfortunate. He was able to use that strategy to get him far into the game, but it could not let him win the game, which is one reason why I ranked him considerably for us down at number 5. I mean, that being said, I can understand, like, had Cindy not been there, he would not have been. He could have been evicted, which is fine. I can understand that, but I have to credit him for using the circumstances he had and using it to the best of his ability. And the fact that he was one of the figureheads behind pulling off arguably the biggest blindside in Big Brother Canada history thus far. I mean, he could have, and a lesser player could have very easily blown his cover by, you know, saying something to the wrong person or acting up in front of Jordan and hinting as if something was happening. He didn't. The diapers got confident, and as a result, he was able to survive. I have to credit that to him. And the fact that, as someone who had relatively little power in the game in terms of competition wins until really the end, the fact that he was able to skirt eviction for so long, I think, is testament to how he was able to survive in terms of longevity. So again, longevity is a huge plus in my book in terms of Godfrey. The big minus for me is that it didn't translate well as a winning game in front of a crowd. Now, Brent, I know you had some more stuff to say about Godfrey, so I'm going to give you the floor for a little bit longer.
Well, my biggest problem with Godfrey is the fact that he got off the horse that brought him, because he was going this whole way to, you know, the Big Brother 3 Canada finale, not winning anything, you know, wanting to create a persona where he was not respected. And then at the end, he decides to win something when I think it probably would have been better for him to throw it to Ashley, and she's always going to take Godfrey to the end, and I think maybe then he has a chance to win. My problem with Godfrey is, again, it goes back to holistic view of Big Brother. Godfrey forgets the number one thing that you have to have. You guys can go on about all the fabulous moves that he made, all the things that he was saying he was doing and tap dancing and all of that. You have to get people to like you. They did not like Godfrey. They did not like Godfrey. They did not respect Godfrey.
They just didn't like the respected more than Sarah.
They thought he was a complete joke, Taryn. They did. And if you have to depend on a jury speech to rectify the damage that you've done in the 3 months previously, where he willingly created a persona that was not to be respected so that he could get to the end, then you've got a problem. I mean, he just was unable to empathize and form bonds with people. They did not feel good about giving Godfrey the money. My problem.
But they very well might have against Ashley. They did respect him. Kevin left the game thinking Godfrey's playing amazingly.
You know, it's so funny. It's so funny that Mike brings up the fact that, you know, I mean, he didn't get power into the end. I think it's a good thing he didn't get power to the end, because the one time he did have power, he totally blew it.
Because
who knows what he would have done to his game if he actually won HOH when there was Final 5 or Final 4.
He was throwing a lot of those competitions because he knew that being in power would be bad for his game.
again, this just comes back to a different view of the game. Like Alex said, you're going to either view
abstract terms, and I can view it in like actual terms.
You're viewing it. You look at like separate moves along the way, and I think you have to look at things as a whole. Godfrey people just didn't like him. But so how are you going to credit somebody as a good Big Brother player when literally there's no way people are going to vote for him to win at the end. But they may, in essence, vote against Ashley, but there's no way he's ever going to get to the end in a winning position where people feel good about giving him the money. And I can't believe you have him on number 3 on your list because of that.
Well, these two people agree with me as well, for the most part. So,
fine. That's great. That doesn't mean that I'm wrong. It just means that I have a different viewpoint of it that may be correct.
All right. So, Godfrey Manguiza, depending on what camp you may be in, no matter what, he is number 5 on our rankings. That is substantiated. Something that is a little less substantiated, guys. It would not be a true ranking on the Happy Hour without a tie. So, we have to resolve a tie between these next two people for who is going to be number 3 and who is going to be number 4. The two people up for contention are, from Big Brother Canada 3, Bruno Aiello, and the winner of Big Brother Canada 2, John Hundo Party. Now, in terms of Bruno, Alex had him at number 5, Brent had him at number 6, I'd had him at number 3, Terem had him down at number 9. And for John, Alex had him at number 6, Brent had him at number 9, I had him at number 4, and Taryn also had him at number 4. Let's start our talk with Bruno, our 7th place finisher here. Alex, talk to me a little bit about your thoughts on Bruno.
Yeah, Bruno is an interesting one because Bruno's a guy that, you know, for a long time in Big Brother Canada 3, I think a lot of people were discounting him. But he was playing a very, very subtly strong game. He was maintaining relationships throughout the house. He was very, very aware of things that were going on. And he was, you know, we talk about like kind of big alpha guys that are the head of the alliance or run the alliance kind of will get cut down at a point. Bruno was very smart to never actually be that guy. He pulled Greg and put him on a pedestal. And then when Greg was gone, he grabbed Bobby and put him on a pedestal. And then Zach, he always found a bigger threat or a bigger target to kind of push ahead of him. And there's just not a lot of people who have demonstrated that successfully so far through three seasons of Big Brother Canada. His decision to like just snap put the POV on Zach, like in the moment, to me really demonstrates a high proficiency for making decisions in this game, for knowledge of this game, and, you know, reacting to pressure, you know, making a decision in the clutch, and, you know, thinking on his feet. I think that's something that, you know, can't be taught to some degree. You know, you can know all the right things to do, but when Arissa says, I need an answer now, you see a lot of people make mistakes, and Bruno did not. And a lot of people also might not have the balls to just stand up and put that necklace on Zach, and he didn't hesitate. And I think that's not nothing. You know, he was in a dominant position without the twist. You know, there was twists throughout the game, but he just by design was always in a strong space until kind of that triple eviction reared its head. I think, you know, it was almost, you know, I hate to make the comparison, but, you know, given that they were both dads and they both kind of tried to play a strong social game from that perspective, I think there was a lot of like, you know, he certainly tried to take a lot from Derek. And I think there was a lot of Derek-esque, you know, mannerisms and, you know, conversations that Bruno was having throughout the house that really impressed me throughout the season.
Brent, what do you think about Alex's Bruno-Derek comparison and how does his game stack for you overall?
I mean, I think it's fair. I think that the one obvious chink in the armor is his temper. You know, that argument that he got into with Sarah the week that Ashley was HOH. It's true that, you know, he thought he was never going to be in danger, but you know there are twists in Big Brother. And you knew it was odd that Canada voted for the have-nots. I mean, that just smelled from the beginning. It's like if you were in the house and you've watched Big Brother, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, they say, Canada's going to vote for the have-nots, which is essentially telling you who the unpopular people are in the house. And it's Sarah and Brittany. I feel like you have to know better that maybe there's something fishy going on this week. But that, you know, that's asking him to be omniscient. I'm not asking him to be omniscient here. I am asking him to keep his temper. And even though I have him high-ish on my list, I do wish that he was able to control that better, because he had a real chance there to stay in the house if he was able to control his temper, and they would have evicted Zach. But Sarah just found him completely unworkable at that point, and that's why they ended up evicting him. I really like what Alex said about his ability to think in the moment. And by the way, it was even worse than what it's like on Big Brother US. In Big Brother US, you win the veto, and Julie Chen says, you know, you'll only have a few minutes to think about it. Arisa, he was literally walking in the door, and she was like, okay, we need an answer now. Come on. And, you know, it's like I didn't even like Bruno at that point, and I felt for him because he absolutely had no time to talk with anybody about if I use this, what's going to happen here. He made a ballsy move to take Zach off the block, which definitely helped his game. If not for the have-not power, I really like where Bruno was positioned in the game. And he has a really good way where I think people like Derek, they don't view him as a threat. And I think he is clearly a jury threat to get to.
So, Taryn, you had Bruno the lowest out of all us. Albeit it was number 9, so it wasn't that low. But talk to us a little bit about your thoughts on his game.
I think he did a really, really good job for a lot of the game. I think his position in the chop shop was fantastic. He had lots of connections outside of it. He used Greg as a shield. Lots of good things. A fault that we find pretty quickly is that he doesn't listen to Godfrey and he doesn't target Zach when he has that that veto or whatever it was, that special other special power that we forget about because he didn't use it. That was a mistake.
The double veto, yeah.
Right, yeah, the double veto. He should have gone after Zach there. He couldn't pull the trigger, but he learned from his mistake and he learned to pull the trigger quickly, and we saw that in the triple eviction. Unfortunately, like Brent mentioned, I think his biggest downfall is his temper, and he can't control his emotions when he gets worked up. And we've also heard about him in the jury and how him being so overbearing about Godfrey's game really put people off to Godfrey's game. He was very good. He was good strategically. He was good socially. He was very good at persuading people. But there were a lot of flaws that came with that. And I think that ultimately him leaving is partially his fault. Yes, how do you anticipate that there's going to be this crazy power? But there's no reason to get into that argument with Sarah. And really, there was a long time where he wasn't aware that Zach was betraying him. So I think he's good. I don't think he's great. And that's really how it goes. I think he was positioned to win because he managed to survive most of the twists that took out some of the other players. But who knows what happens, because Godfrey is a wolf in sheep's clothing, and who knows what happens if he doesn't leave with that twist.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with what you guys have been saying in terms of the argument with Brittany and Sarah. I mean, or Sarah, but Brittany by proxy almost, that like,
right.
Yeah, one of them may be leaving this week, but one of them is most definitely staying unless another triple eviction happens. And if they're winning HOH, you are most likely public enemy number one. I mean, going back to what I was talking about a little bit with Sarah Miller, I think Bruno was another one who walked into this house. He was a dad. He was probably considerably older than the median age of this cast once again. So it, on paper, it should be tough for you to sort of get in there and ingratiate yourself among people that are not your age. But not only was Bruno able to do so, he was able to get in with the bomb squad majority alliance. And so he was able to really protect himself those first few weeks. I do feel like when you win HOH in these middle round weeks, like 4, 5, 6, 7, those are the times when the big, you know, social targets or, you know, the people that are making the most noise are usually out by then. And so you make a really difficult choice of, am I drawing lines in the sand with the choices that I'm making here? Bruno wins HOH in week 4. He finds reasons, to quote Vanessa Russo, to get Johnny and Sarah up there. He walks out with his hands relatively clean, which for a mid-game HOH is not too common. And I do think, like we guys were talking about, I think he does have a good head in terms of strategy. I mean, I think the move to take off Zach is a very interesting one. I think he definitely was still wanting to sort of create that meat shield and sort of try to meander some sort of trust in there. if he does, it would be interesting to see, you know, what Bruno's endgame plan would have been if he chose to stick with the diapers. Would he be able to worm his way in there? But I feel like Bruno was able to sort of walk in there with the deck sort of stacked against him and able to, you know, make lemons out of lemonade and do a pretty good game for himself. It was unfortunate that, you know, I think, again, we take a left turn after the triple eviction happens between his argument and Brittany and Sarah throwing him up, thinking he was the bigger threat and evicting him. I think that was sort of where his game went to hell. Let's talk about our other tied target here. Let's talk about the winner of Big Brother 2, John Party. Brent, talk to me a little bit about your thoughts on John's game.
This one along with Kevin Martin is the toughest one for me to rank. It's so hard to separate John from Netta, I feel like, because I feel like Netta really was his tutor throughout the game. John, you know, let's be honest. I mean, John didn't know hardly anything about Big Brother when he came into the house. I mean, the greatest things that he has going for them are the things that I like about Sarah. He's innately a likable guy. People like being around him. He's able to form bonds with people. He's able to make people think that that he cares about them. And that's for things that are not necessarily true of everybody who plays Big Brother. Like I said earlier, it was more Netta, but John definitely had a part in it. Their finest work was getting Arlie out of the house and getting the gremlins to vote the wrong way. Because the minute Arlie was gone, I love looking at the gremlins' face and Allison's face when they evicted Arlie. And like, he wasn't out the door 2 seconds and they were already like, yeah, I think we blew that one. And they knew that John and Netta were totally plotting against them. I think he's a good... He's a better than average player who got really lucky to find one of the best players to ever play Big Brother as his soulmate. And they're still together, right? Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. Oh, I don't know. We don't know. Oh, okay. Well, who knows?
Alex, I don't know.
I don't keep up on that sort of
head.
Thing.
I think they are. We're not exactly the Us Weekly RHAP here, but I don't know. I don't know if that's John Netta is still a thing.
Yeah, they're not.
Okay, well, who knows? They were soulmates for a few months. That's all we can say. Definitely within the game, I think they had a great time together. And so it's very hard for me to dissect John's game apart from Netta's game. It's easier for me to dissect Netta's game apart from John's game.
Yeah, so, Taryn, do you have similar thoughts of Brent? Do you have trouble disseminating his game from Netta's at the end of the day?
Not particularly, because that's something I was really paying attention to when I was watching that season was, I initially saw John as the kind of the force in the pair. But the second he evicts Arlie, it really comes out that no, this is Netta in charge. And then I really tried to pay attention to that distinction throughout the entire way. She was really running John's game for a long time. That said, he has the raw abilities. She was able to push him into doing things that were crazy. It was very Emmett-like. He came into the game not knowing a whole lot about it, but has this unbelievable personality that fits the game really well, good at competitions, with somebody strategic to help guide him. He's incredible at the game. And ultimately, he's able to realize that he needs to take Sabrina instead of Netta, which is a huge credit to him, because I think that's a difficult decision to come to when you have somebody as good as Netta in your ear. We've seen other players not capable of making that decision, who are also very good. I think that's a big distinction with John. And John is, in the same way Netta is a huge part of John's success, John is a huge part of Netta's success. He was the social aspect. She was the strategic aspect. The difference is that I think she has a bit of both. She could have done it on her own. I'm not sure John could have done it on his own, but the fundamentals are still there to make him a top tier player.
Alex, what do you think? Do you agree with Taryn that John on his own might not have as much strategic metal as he did with Netta?
Yeah, I think, I mean, Brent and Taryn both have hit on, you know, most of the points I would touch on, I think, at this point on John. Although one thing I think is interesting is that we have John and Bruno tied, and these are the two guys that got injured in the house, Bruno's thumb and John's shoulder, both kind of helped mask their ability in some way. And I don't necessarily think that's a coincidence. You know, I think there is some value to kind of getting winged or having some minor injury that brings you down a peg if you're seen as someone who could win competitions. But, I think John's an interesting case because I would put him on the short list of like, you know, before they started the game, you know, he clearly doesn't know the game, but it's like, if you could coach somebody who has the skill set already that you would want for a player, just doesn't know anything about what they're getting themselves into, John would definitely be on that list because he really did bring a lot that you'd like from a Big Brother player, pretty much everything you like from a Big Brother player, other than knowledge of the game of Big Brother. So, I mean, you know, that was always going to be the challenge for him, is to, you know, navigate the strategic stuff with when it was all brand new to him. And, you know, gravitating towards Netta was exactly what he needed to do. I think it would be interesting to see John without Netta. I wonder if you would get almost like a JT and heroes versus villains type of situation with just some just outrageously bad decision making. Because I think it is fair to think that John without Netta is much less savvy strategically. However, he's always going to just do inherently reasonably well on his likability alone. He was always very good. You know, you talk about most people in the Big Brother house discount somebody. There's at least one or two people in the house that they just don't talk to on a regular basis, or, you know, they just ignore, or like, you know, Godfrey or a Heather early on in Big Brother Canada too. John really seemed to me to be one of the few people in Big Brother Canada history to really make a concerted effort to talk to everyone and make friends with everyone and hang out with everyone. And that's, you know, something that you just bring to life naturally that will always serve you well, no matter who you play with, because you're just the kind of guy people naturally want to be around. And, you know, he might not win a lot of times, but I think he's always going to, you know, be making the jury stage and be flirting with the chance just based on, you know, just the inherent social likability.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I would call him probably one of the most like natural Big Brother players. I don't mean natural like, oh, he's made for this game, but he's the type of person that like you could see always doing very well just because he has both the goofy charm that lets him be a good social player, but at the same time, he does have he was building a strategic mind and making decisions, realizing what he had to do to make himself further in the game, to the point of where he cut his biggest ally and biggest threat to win the game right at the end, which was a completely right decision. I mean, I feel like even in the beginning of the game, when it was really first five domineering, he was able to make that connection with Kenny. And granted, it might have been geographical, but the fact is he was able to do really well and avoid the first five's gaze because he had Kenny there on the inside to say, like, no, let's keep John around. And I think, you know, this is someone who was able to play the cut Arlie, and you know, cutting Adele wasn't his fault, but he did put him up there. And so, you know, he ended up cutting Heather too because he won Final Four veto. And arguably, these could be people that vote against him because they say, "How dare you take Sabrina to the end instead of us after we make this deal?" But instead, they choose to honor the gameplay that he had in terms of his likability as well. So the only qualms I really have with his game is that, I mean, it's I'm not a big fan of the fact that he had to win the Final Four veto. I know it's a little contentious as to whether Netta would have cut him at that point, but
she would have.
But so yeah, so if he didn't win, he was gone, and so I feel like that might be a little bit of a sticking point. But the fact is, I do enjoy just all the stuff that he learned to play over the course of this game and how he was able to apply it. Here's the big question, guys: in your opinion, who is number three? Who is number four? Bruno Aiello or John? Taryn, you have something to say first?
I do think there are a few things that should be pointed out. His connection with Kenny, it did go sour, and he was on the first five's target range when the Canada HOH happened. He might have been in a lot of trouble had that not happened, and if they had won that HOH. And also, I think him taking out Arlie and the other one, Adele. Both not great moves for him strategically. So like I said, I mean, I think he's very good, but, I thought those things should be pointed out.
So would you put Bruno above John in your opinion?
John's ahead of Bruno. No question for me.
What about you guys?
I've got Bruno one spot ahead of John on my rankings. I think Bruno just, you know, John had some help, whether or not, you know, like, you know, he could have been in trouble if Canada's HOH doesn't happen. You know, it did seem like there was a chance for the first five to run the table, and that's a very different game. Whereas Bruno had the twist kind of go against him, and I feel like was able to kind of counteract. So I did give Bruno a little bit of an edge there.
What about you, Brent? What do you think?
I concur. I give, you know, with even though he has his faults as far as inability to control his emotions, I really do think that, you know, Bruno did well in spite of the twists, and I feel like John did good almost because of the twists that helped him. So I'm going to give the edge to Bruno in this spot.
Yeah, sorry, Taryn. I mean, I'm going to go with the technicality as well. I put Bruno one spot above John. So I think by consensus, by majority opinion, I should say, let's put Bruno at number three and John number four. I feel like the chat room is going to throw in the diamond.
I warned you. I told you that this list, I did not endorse this list. I told you. You should have known.
Yeah,
the chat room is going crazy.
We're all getting, we're throwing
all,
us. yeah, throwing us the wolves as per usual,
or the wolves in sheep's clothing, if you will. Yeah. So, but there's, I mean, you heard us wax profane about both these guys for the past 10 minutes. So, you know, if your mileage may vary here, let's move on to number two, guys. I think I hear my doorbell because I think the milkman's here. It is Emmett Blois, third place in Big Brother Canada season one. Emmett ranked third with Alex. With Brent, he was down at number five. Number two for both myself and Tarrant. Brent, talk to me a little bit about your thoughts on Emmett.
I love a lot of things about Emmett's game. It's just amazing to me how somebody who is such an obvious athletic threat is not really targeted by anybody in the house. I mean, I know that he was definitely immune from, I think it was like, what, final eight, final seven on, where they went, you know, back-to-back-to-back-to-back HOHs with him and Jillian. Nevertheless, the one thing that does bring him down to number five for me is that I feel like he has an obvious path to the end where it gets down to final four. It's between Tala and Gary. Gary, someone who's come back from the jury, who has been with the jurors, who, you know, for all of his flaming gayness, is a really athletic boy. I mean, he really is. And you decide to keep Gary over someone who is so pathetic, so terrible, and Tala, and get rid of her at that point when you know that that is not the correct decision to make. So, you know, he's it's so troubling to me that he plays such a great game up until this point and then makes a fatal error at the end where if he doesn't make that mistake, him and Jillian win parts one and parts two of final HOH. No problem whatsoever. There's no way in the world Tala wins either one of those three. And I feel like even on a neutral playing ground, you should know that Tala is never going to be able to beat Jillian at anything that they, you know, put out there for them. So I don't know why he thought it was a good idea to take Gary to the end, other than the fact that Gary was telling him to his face, lying, by the way, that, you know, I'm going to take – well, I know, but right at this point in the final four, he is lying to him because at this point he's already talked to Dan Geesling. Yeah. He's planning on betraying Emmett, but he's lying directly to Emmett's face saying, I'm going to take you to the final two, you know, if I'm the final HOH, and Emmett buys it. And it's a lie, and he ends up in third place for it. So he got a little bit of payback because Jillian ended up winning at the end. But I have him at number five on my list because of that. And I'll let everybody, the two of you that put him in the second place spot, I really do want to hear why you think he's number two, which is a very vaunted place on my list because that's where I have Sarah Hanlon.
So Taryn, there have been some claims that when Dan Geesling came into the Big Brother house that might have actually been a detriment to Emmett's game. Now, as a big Dan person yourself, do you agree with this theory? And what are your thoughts on Emmett's game overall?
I mean, I was, as a Dan fan, I was watching those feeds all night, and the change in the house after Dan was in there was incredible. Gary was professing to Dan his love and loyalty for Emmett, and he was willing to take Emmett to the end, even if he lost to him. And Dan managed to mist him out of it, was basically what happened. I considered putting Dan at number one, best Big Brother Canada player of all time, because oh my God, the impact he had on this house.
that would have been great. You should have done that. That would have been awesome.
Number one, Hayden Moss.
Yeah, John Shoulder. You know, all these guys could have made it.
but anyway, that said, I think Emmett is a fantastic player. I was talking with Colin Stone from the Dom and Colin podcast, and Colin kind of compared him. He said he's kind of like the JT of Big Brother Canada, where he didn't really have any knowledge of the game going in, but the amount of love that he garnered from these people and the trust that they gave him, from Peter to Alec to everybody to Jillian, they all loved Emmett. And when Dan went in that house, Dan was astounded at the amount of control Emmett had in the game. And it kind of even took people like that were watching the feeds by surprise, because it was hard to realize until Dan came in just how under his spell they were. Ultimately, I think he makes a huge mistake by keeping Gary instead of Tala. I understand where he's coming from, though, because he did have Gary so spellbound, and it did kind of take Dan to remove that spell from him. And not knowing that Dan had removed the spell, and the fact that Gary really shouldn't have been there in the first place, I don't subtract as much as I normally would have in this kind of situation where he makes such an obvious mistake. But it is the reason he's number two instead of number one for me. Another fault I have in his game is his back-to-back-to-back-to-back HOH wins with Jillian. Who knows if he had been, if he would have had that control without that huge comp spree. I think probably given the amount of social control he had, but it's hard to know because that happened. So I don't have that data in front of me. So that's another reason why he's number two for me and not number one, but fantastic player and unbelievable instincts and ability.
Alex, your thoughts on Emmett?
Yeah, I think Emmett, you know, I think there's a lot of similarities between John and Emmett, obviously, as, you know, strong athletic guys that kind of figured the game out as they were kind of thrown into the fire, so to speak. I think Emmett is maybe like a, you know, a more cerebral, kind of more calculated version of John, maybe. He certainly is more strategic. And, you know, you were talking about, like, would John have the strategy without Netta? And it's like, I think we see what the John... You know, if John went to like a Netta crash course, I think, you know, he might come out looking more like Emmett, because Emmett really, really figured the game out on a level that John couldn't during his time in the house. I saw some things, you know, during Emmett's game that were just remarkable. Like, you know, and it doesn't seem like a big deal, really, but when you really think about it, it's huge. I mean, obviously, Quattro is a huge part of his early game. It really set him up well, kind of getting in with Alec and Peter, who were working overtime to kind of play the game early on. And Tom, who was going to be seen as a bigger target as him, bigger target than Emmett, especially once Tom kind of went on a little bit of an HOH power trip, which was inevitable. But yeah, you had this moment where Emmett doesn't push Alec and Peter too hard to save Tom, because he knows it'll ostracize him from that group. But he also, at the same time, does put his foot down about Liza. And is able to kind of navigate these two things where they don't all really want the same thing, but he's able to keep it together in the interest of kind of going forward as a strong three of guys and really get what he needs out of the situation without, you know, pushing too hard on what he wants from the situation. And I think that's a great distinction to notice in the moment, and for him to kind of just, you know, it's a good sign as someone who was just able to feel his way through the game. At critical times, he won Tala, Andrew, and Gary to his side. Critical times, at the times where those votes were needed by everyone, Emmett came up the winner every time. And he was in there with people who were self-professed students of the game, super fans. You know, Peter and Alec went in there thinking that this was, you know, Peter's infamous first line: this is a sport of the mind and the greatest mind will win. And Emmett got you, bro. I mean, he really did, time and time again. And, you know, I think it's really telling. And I think Emmett is another guy that, you know, put him in just about any house, any situation, obviously with people that don't know who he is. And he's always, always going to do well.
Yeah. I mean, I want to track Emmett's progress a little bit in this game. So he walked into the house. Suzette wins the first HOH. And what we were talking about before we recorded as one of the most like lulzy HOH competitions in retrospect, just this idea of first person to answer the phone is HOH, and Suzette decides to do the you and you. So Emmett is facing eviction the very first week. I mean, he's a very prevalent, even though he didn't win the veto like Tom, he's a very prevalent physical target. And he does the right thing. He starts laying very low. Even though Quattro was formed, he says, I'm just going to take a back seat. I'm going to try my best, albeit maybe cheat sometimes at HOH competitions, but I'm going to try my best to compete, but I'm going to try to lay low at the same time. Emmett really has this great read for the changing dynamics of the house as well. I mean, once he saw Quattro was sinking, he jumps off and says, you know what? That's done. Sorry, Tom, you're too much of a liability. When he sees that Alec and Peter are starting to drift away from him as well, he says, all right, Andrew, now that AJ's gone, you're a rogue vote. Let me bring you in. Let's form an East Coast alliance. So I think that Emmett had a really good sense of when to make the right move, and he was able to do so. Like you just said, Alex, he was able. There were times when he was able to really rope in these stray individuals to work well for his game. I think the fact that, again, I'm going to keep bringing up the showman steal, but he had a guaranteed partner there in Jillian. And the fact that he had evaded the block so many times, it might have been due to comp wins at the end of it. But the fact that he was able to evade the block so many times after being nominated that first week, in spite of being one of the biggest targets and one of the biggest partnerships in the house, is still pretty astounding. I mean, I think the big sticking point is that Brent pointed out, not taking Tala over Gary in the final three. Yes, the first HOH comp is usually endurance, and there's a chance that Tala may have survived. But unless it's a competition about walking in high heels on a treadmill, I think Jillian's beating Tala any day of the week. So I feel like he definitely made a big miscalculation there, especially because it resulted in his eviction overall. But I mean, that this guy, I feel like he played a very, very masterful game, especially for what some might perceive as like a country bumpkin, you know, a guy from the farm. He was able to come in and kind of snow everybody and make his way to the end and play a really impressive game. Any other thoughts on our number two, Emmett, before we move on to the grand finale, number one? Okay, here we are, guys. We have waited all this time. The number one Big Brother Canada player of all time, as the chat has predicted, it is a tie between Suzette Amaya and Poppin' Paul Jackson. That's it, guys. Paul Jackson. Thank you very much.
Come on.
Hashtag masturbating to Godfrey. Good night. No, I'm just kidding. The number one is, of course, Netta Kalantar, third place finisher in Big Brother 2. Brent, Taryn, and myself all had Netta at number one. Alex had Netta at number two. Let's
yeah,
just start waxing.
Netta.
Let's start waxing poetic about Netta here. Alex, talk to me a little bit about her.
It's so unfair that I put someone second on a list of 46 people, and then by default, I have to talk about the cons only because you guys all say she's the best, right?
Well, that's your choice. You chose Kevin.
I'm well aware. I knew. And, you know, in part to spark debate, I really do believe that, you know, I think there's something to be said for Kevin's potential over anyone else I've seen play this game. But neither here nor there, I think... Yes, I really do. To answer that question, I really believe Kevin is the better player. If you put them in 100 Big Brother houses, I believe Kevin wins more times. Anyways, okay. Obviously, you guys are going to talk about the many, many illustrious virtues of Netta, the Big Brother player. So I guess I'll let you guys do that because how could you not be doing that? She's number one on all your lists. I guess I'm relegated to talking about the negatives, like how she dumped food out of spite, which is funny, but a bad play. Let's be real. How she needed Canada to make the first move on the first five in all likelihood. She was kind of, you know, before Canada really flips that switch and then Arlie flips the switch to go with Canada and like kind of doubles down on the luck that she needed to make that big shift in the house happen. She's aligned with sinking ship after sinking ship early and two people in Sabrina and Sarah that are just hoodwinking her for a few weeks with really no knowledge that it's going on. I mean, obviously the fix was kind of in from before she ever entered the house and that they made an alliance, you know, in the first minute. But, you know, I mean, it's just hard for me to see her, you know, as the best player when I have seen other people go against, in my mind, similarly horrible circumstances and overcome much quicker and without the help of Canada. I feel like she needed to rally the girls against John sooner to have a real chance of winning. I mean, there was a real opportunity there with her, Sabrina, Heather, Rochelle, Allie. I mean, tell me she's not the likely winner of that group of five. And she can't make an onion alliance with like her, Sabrina, Roe, and with her, Heather, Allie. You know what I mean? Like, tell me there's not options there if she reassesses at that point and doesn't just kind of, you know, I think part of her problem was she just got, you know, complacent and a bit comfortable in the John relationship and in the knowledge that John was a shield, a huge, massive shield and a bit of a crutch. And it was just, she felt it was too soon to pull the trigger, but it really wasn't. It had to be pulled then. And the fact that she waited too long on John to me is just another slight mistake. You know, she has a really sharp wit and a really sharp tongue. And I love that, but I do too. And I feel like that's, I've always thought about it as like on a general self-assessment. That's something that'll get you in trouble in the game. That's something that can come out at the wrong time. And, you know, we saw it a couple times early. And then, you know, late in the game, the circumstances never went against her. So we never really saw her have to deal with adversity again. For the most part. Again, she's second on my list. I think she's a fantastic player. And I would have her very high on my list of overall Big Brother players. But these are holes that I'm obligated to point out.
No, absolutely. And like I said before, I'll give the disclaimer that I still think there are holes in Netta's game. I completely agree. I think, you know, if you stack her up against, you know, even are like your top four Big Brother winners, I think it's tough to put her in that echelon. But that's just my opinion. Brent, what are your thoughts on Netta's overall game?
Well, you know, I have to say that, you know, Big Brother 3 Canada is the only season that I live feeded. So I didn't live feed 1 or 2 necessarily. I mean, I watched parts of it, obviously. I enjoyed lots of it, but I didn't do it religiously like I do now. But from what I can recall, Netta just amazed me. And I feel like that we all rooted for Netta, and I know this has nothing to do with our rankings, but Netta is us. She's like the girl hot version of us because she loves Big Brother. She loves the strategy. She lives for the game. And she's like a super fan, and that's what we are. So my thoughts on Netta are this. I go back to the week that she was the instant HOH, and she has a decision to make. This is right after they evicted Arlie. So they have power in the house. They got Arlie out. She wants to get rid of Allison. A lot of other players would have just gone up there and said, these are my nominations. You know, I'm nominating you, Allison, and you, Sabrina. But Netta took it upon herself to use the little bit of time that Big Brother gave her to say, Allison, I'm nominating you. You are my target. And these are the reasons why, blah, 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 blah. And Serena, girl, you're the pawn. So, I mean, she instructed her alliance at that point. This is who I want out of the house. Even though you have Sabrina, who is in an obvious pair with Rochelle at that point, but she wants to get rid of Allison because she thinks it's the better move for her game, which she was correct. I do understand where Alex is coming from. As far as, you know, not pulling the trigger on John when she needed to. But I also wonder about a world where she goes to the end with those girls. I always feel like Netta's going to end up fifth or fourth if she goes to the end unless she wins out. So I feel like they're always going to look at Netta in an all-girl alliance at the end and go, girl, you're the obvious winner here. We have to get rid of you. I mean, unless she wins out, I think she's out in fifth or fourth. So I don't know that she necessarily does better in that scenario. I think it ultimately comes down to what Rob said, Rob Sesternino said, which is, you know, you just have to win a competition someplace. And she wasn't able to do that when she needed to. And she paid the price for it. But that doesn't discount all of the good things that she did up until
that
point.
Taryn, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I see a lot of faults in her game. I don't agree that she needed Canada's HOH. She wasn't really in danger there. John was a lot more in danger, but even then he wasn't necessarily the number one target, and it would have taken a very rare circumstance for her to ever even be in danger. So she doesn't need that. It definitely helps her though. And that does falter in a small way because we didn't get to see her take that on without the help. And then also I think her biggest mistake is she similar to Vanessa's mistake, but not as bad, I don't think, because where Steve was always going to evict Vanessa, John genuinely was going to take Netta for a really long time. And by the time he wasn't going to take her, it was too late to take him out. So her biggest fault there is not staying on top of John and making sure that he stayed loyal. She kind of took his loyalty for granted. And when she saw it slipping away, she didn't do enough to pull it back. I genuinely think that, and granted, we didn't get to see these feeds, so we don't know exactly where she went wrong, but it really felt like if she had done more work, she could have turned him around, but she saw it slipping away and she just kind of let it happen, which kind of sucks, but I think that's a mistake. That said, though, she's fantastic at this game. She in the beginning, she doesn't have a lot of control, but she has so much awareness, despite not knowing everything, that she knows that she needs to stay low. She knows she can't talk to Sabrina about an all-girls thing that genuinely cuts out the guys, because then she's on the hook. She lets Ika do that for her. She knows who she can trust. She knows how to maneuver her way until she gets to a point where she is able to see everything that's going on. The awareness is there. And from there, she's always making the right moves. Taking out Adele was the right move. The way she went about it was not quite the right move. She was too forceful on John. And that, again, that leads into the situation where she that's her biggest fault, really. That said, I find bigger faults with Emmett, as I described, and same with John. So it really goes to the point where I don't necessarily think she's, you know, the best player ever, but I think she's the best player of Big Brother Canada. And I think she fits up in there with some of the top non-winners from the US as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think that I would give the blanket statement that I think pretty much every sloppy seconds HOH after Canada's HOH, she had some part of, whether she was the HOH or whether she was helping determine the nominations. I mean, she was the big one to help, you know, she was the big one to say John backdoor Arlie. She was obviously the one to get together with Heather and say, let's, you know, let's try to get rid of Adele. And so she was able to, you know, again, she was able to make the moves without, she was able to have power without even having power, which I think just speaks to testament. Yeah, go ahead, Taryn.
Yeah, the control she had over John and Heather, and to some extent the goblins, was fantastic. And that's really what got her to the end and what got her so close to winning. All she needed to do was stay on top of John a little more.
Yeah, and I think Brent, you made a very good point about like the instant eviction was, you know, I don't want to compare it to Topaz, but I think her decision to take out Allison was great. She was basically pulling a Rob Cesternino with Christy Smith. She was taking out the person in the middle because Allison was still wavering between the two alliances, and she said, let me just take out the middleman. I'll create these two different sides. I'll make sure things are set in stone so that paves a clearer path for me to the end. And I think that was a really masterful move on her part, a great use of a twist in her direction. Like John, I'll give the same compliment that I think she was able to summarily take out her allies and bring Sabrina to the end with, I mean, if she made it to the end, I don't know there will be that much ire against her for doing so, which was great. And at the same time, she was able to make her own inroads with Heather as well. Heather became like her best friend in the game, which is fantastic considering how much of an outcast Heather was to begin with in the first few weeks. I mean, like Taryn just mentioned, I think she just got a little too, you know, she got a little too fresh or too a little too smart when it came to handling Adele's eviction. That got John onto her. She could have gotten rid of John at four, but he won the veto. He won the HOH, took her out, and that's where her story ends. But I think the fact is she on paper was a very underestimated person in terms of here's this little woman who, you know, it looks very, you know, underwhelming. She seems like someone that's just sort of there to be there to have a good time for the winter. And she was able to immediately impress. I mean, you guys were talking about Big Brother crushes during your Best Player to Never Win podcast. I would say of all international editions, Neda Kalantar is my Big Brother crush. And I say that as I'm gesticulating to the wedding ring on my finger, because I think she's the perfect combination of personality, looks, and strategic acumen. So I cannot speak enough about how much we love Neda. I would be interested, though, to bring up, you know, what Taryn was talking about, not to go back too much to the players that you guys ranked in previous podcasts, but how do people like Neda and Emmett rank up against your best winners and your best players not to win? This is a question for all you guys.
I think Emmett would probably be, you know, at the bottom of my top 10, and Neda would probably be in my top 4. I think that I would probably have her at 4, I'm thinking. Yeah. I don't know. It's hard because Andy's in there too. So she'd be no worse than 5. Mm-hmm. I'll just say that.
Is that to never win or all players?
Oh, I thought we were talking about all players. Yeah, because we did. What are you talking about, Mike?
Let's go with top players to never win, just because Emma and Neda both fall into that category as well.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. I mean, it's her. It's tough because Vanessa's in there too. So I don't know. I would definitely have her in my top 2.
I have her right near Vanessa. I think they're very similar in a lot of ways, in skill. I go back and forth between Vanessa or Neda, and I think because I recently went back and I looked at Neda's game, I think I gotta go with Neda over Vanessa, which puts her probably in 3rd of all of everyone. And then Emmett probably around 5 or 6, maybe behind Shelly, maybe right above Shelly.
What are your thoughts, Alex?
Yeah, it's tough. You know, I really did approach this as like, I really do think there's some differences in the game. So I factored in some things with this ranking that I didn't factor in with the US thing, such as, you know, charisma. I really weighted here. I never really weighed that at all in the last rankings. But, you know, obviously, I think Neda, Emmett, they're in the conversation for me. Beyond that, maybe not, but they're certainly, you know, probably flirting with top 5. Neta's definitely flirting with the top 5. Emmett, I might have kind of around the 10 spot, I would guess, just off the top of my head.
Guys, we did it. We have ranked, in our opinion, the top 10 Big Brother Canada players so far. Just to read them out as a summary, to recap the past 2-plus hours. Number 10 is Jillian McLaughlin. Number 9, Zach Olenek. Number 8, Arlie Chabon. Number 7, Sarah Hanlon. 6, Kevin Martin. 5, Godfrey Manguiza. Number 4, John Pardee. Number 3, Bruno Aiello. Number 2, Emmett Blois. Number 1, Neda Kalantar. Let's finish up. Any final words here, guys? I'll go counterclockwise around my blab this time. You want to give any final thoughts, and also any other honorable mentions, other players that you feel like you want to mention in terms of people that might be in contention for being a good player as we go into Big Brother Canada 4. So, Brent, why don't you start?
Well, I'm just going to tell people, because I know they've been asking me on Twitter, you know, they kept saying, though, I'm sure Brent's going to have Brittany really high on his ranks. Well, I did have her on my rankings. I had her at number 10. I've gotten some pushback from JP. He thinks that that was the best situation that Brittany could have ever ended up in, which I have to really sort of discount. But I have Brittany on my rank, my ranking at number 10. I have Allison White from Big Brother Canada 2 at number 11. And that's it for the people that who didn't, you know, who we've already talked about. So I don't know what Taryn, who did you have on your list?
We talked about everyone on my list, actually.
Who didn't make anything. Oh, you're that good.
No,
okay,
I disagree
good.
With the overall
okay, Alex,
list.
Let's hear from you.
We've talked about almost everybody on my list. I would have liked to see, you know, a little more representation for obviously Kevin. I'm higher on than you guys. And I like Sarah Miller. The one person I had on my list that you guys did not was Liza Stinton. I actually saw a lot that I liked from right. Liza. Obviously, she was not the most well-liked person inside or outside of the house. But, you know, there's not a lot of people who have demonstrated knowledge of meat shields and how to use them. And Liza, I remember, you know, one of my most iconic moments from Big Brother Canada 1 is Liza's ox and ram speech, where she's really just beating Jillian over the head with this idea that they can use these two guys as, you know, for lack of better terms, like farm mules to just drag them further in the game. And she's right. That's a very fundamental, very strong strategy for a girl like Liza to employ. And she saw it from the get-go. So I think she has some skills. You know, she wasn't high on my list, but I think there's something there.
By the way, I have to tell you really quickly, before you give your mm-hmm. people that made your list, Mike, one thing I forgot about Godfrey, the week that Peely was HOH, he inexplicably goes to Peely, who he has had no relationship up to in this time, and he tells Peely to her face, by the way, you're letting Zach, Kevin, and Ashley control your game. You really need to change that if you want to have a shot to win. And what does she do? She predictably goes right back to the Diaper Alliance and tells them exactly what Godfrey said. And dude, what I'm saying is that Godfrey's game is so scattershot. It just, he's throwing shit against the wall. Sometimes it sticks and it looks fabulous from the outside and you guys love it. Sometimes it totally blows up in his face and he probably should have been evicted. But I can't say that he's a savant of the game. He's just throwing stuff up, I feel like, and it's just like, yeah, that worked, and yeah, that didn't. So, you know, I think you need to look no further than his run-in with Peely at HOH to know that he does not know what the hell he's doing.
And there wasn't a lot of things that didn't work.
How did that work?
He got in with Kevin and Peely.
It would not be a good Big Brother podcast without some more Godfrey versus Sarah fighting here. But conversations to continue another day. I will say I'm pretty happy with the list overall. I mean, the top five were in the same order as my top five on my list, so I really can't complain about that. The one person that was left off that was on my list, she was right at number 13, but I had to give some kudos to Heather Dechschmeyer. Considering that for the first few weeks of the game, she was a pariah. I don't know why, but she was a pariah. And the fact that she was able to really make her way, not only ingratiate herself within the house, but able to actually kick some ass and make her way to the top four. I mean, I think her HOH week was pretty perfect in terms of she basically brought everyone in and basically read Kenny like a book and said like, okay, these are the dynamics. This is what I'm going to do. And so I think she really has a good head on her shoulders for someone who comes off as a squeaky voiced airheaded person. So I have to give her some credit there. Guys, thank you so much for coming on to do this. This was a crazy amount of fun. I absolutely love doing this. I think Big Brother Canada is, for all its twists and turns and arguably weird players, I think it's still a fantastic franchise of the show. And so I'm excited. I don't know if you guys are. I'm super excited for March 4th to come around and for us to see another iteration of this.
Absolutely. Yeah, can't wait.
Me too.
I mean, it's all right.
So stay tuned to RHAP and to us about any word about what's going on with Big Brother Canada coverage. I'm not exactly sure what's going on since we do have JP at the ready now. JP will be back next week with some coverage for the Happy Hour. I don't know what it might be, but I will not be here. But thank you guys for having me on. This was a pleasure to do. Please follow all of us on Twitter. You can find Taryn Armstrong at Armstrong Taryn, Alex Kidwell at Alex Kidwell, Brett Wolgamott at One Lucky Gay, and I am at a Mike Bloom type on Twitter. To finish this off, guys, do we have a hashtag that we want to give out for everyone who made it through these rankings? I have a few that I could read out.
Well, we want to hear yours because I know what the chat wants, and I don't think it's proper. They want me to go with my,
I have hashtag one to woo. I have hashtag Taryn's receipts for when Brent tried to directly quote Taryn at the Big Brother Canada 3. I have hashtag lucky bowels, and I have hashtag Kenny's butt. So,
yes. Well, I don't know, Taryn's receipts, or what was it again?
Taryn's receipts, one to woo, lucky bowels, or Kenny's butt.
I like Taryn's receipts. I feel like that gets across the thing. And
I was
going to
say, I like how every time this happens,
that.
It's always a hashtag about it's either Taryn or Alex sounding like Jerry Maguire.
or Blab hating Brent.
Or Blab hating Brent.
Yes.
All right.
Yes,
so
I was trying to bring back that
hashtag.
Let's
do hashtag Taryn's receipts for everyone who made it this far. Again, thank you guys so much for coming on. Thank you guys in the chat. Thank you guys in advance for listening to this in the archives. Jordan Parhar will be back next week with another edition of the Happy Hour. For Taryn Armstrong, Alex Kidwell, Brent Wolgamott, I am Mike Bloom. Hashtag Taryn's receipts. This was the Reality TV Happy Hour. Take care. Spell Parhar without R-H-A-P.